Blog Talk Radio.
BAMS Radio. BAMS Radio. The only station on the planet to give you in-depth insight to Bama football.
AG, Blitz,
and the Bird.
Bring the lumber.
Welcome to another episode of BAMS Radio, and it's that time of the year, ladies and gentlemen, when the madness, yes, March Madness, yes, March Madness, baby, and I'm in studio in the Bird Nest, and Bird has just came on board. What's going on, Bird?
Man, I just slid down the hill off the ice storm that just hit Birmingham. You know, we can't decide if it's going to be freezing cold. You know, only in Alabama do you wear flip-flops and ice skates in the same damn day.
Oh, man, it's awesome to be. I'm in Bird's bird cage, and you can definitely tell he is a New York Yankee fan, ladies and gentlemen. I feel like I'm in George Steinbrenner's office. Hey, also tonight we got the man, you heard him last week, bring one of the most powerful takes of the year on Alabama football and the 10-second rule, Thomas the Rock Watts. What's going on out in L.A. tonight, Thomas?
Oh, not a lot. I'm trying to get over my jet lag, but I'm here for BAMS and I'm ready to rock and roll.
Hey, Thomas, that's why they make vodka.
Yeah. I might have to drop off here in about a half hour because the company wants to take me to dinner, but I'll hang around.
Oh, listen to this.
Would you believe this?
He's out there. Now he's wagging the big dog.
I'll tell you, go Hollywood, you just forget all about you little fellas in Alabama. They sound like Danny Sheridan. I ain't got but 30 minutes for you fellas. I tell you. To let y'all folks know, the SEC tournament is underway, and Auburn is behind by 12 points at halftime, so already reason to celebrate tonight on BAMS Radio, as it's always a pleasure to see the Auburn Tigers losing at whatever they're doing. And of course, they've beaten Carolina twice this year, and they're losing now. And a lot of talk this week about suddenly a renewed interest and a renewed hope in Alabama basketball, and love to hear my panel's take on, does Alabama have a chance in Atlanta this weekend?
Thomas, were you at the game?
I was not, but I can give you my take. I think Alabama has a puncher's chance in the first game, but once you get into the bigger dogs in the SEC, Alabama is just going to get snowed under.
I'm almost going to have to disagree with you. I really, watching the team that I saw play Saturday, I smacked Miss Bird on the knee and I said, where have these guys been all year? It's almost like he found the right chemistry with the right kids at the right time, and they played like a team. For the first time this year, I wasn't watching the 18th episode of Walking Dead on AMC TV with zombies on the floor, you know, wanting to take a bite out of the referee. They played good basketball. But I'll tell you, and I'll say it, here's the second thing, Thomas, and I don't know if you got to watch the game itself, but they got really some good minutes on the bench. In other words, they were strong enough to get him to the bench. Of course, they were up by 23 points most of the game. I mean, they just dominated Arkansas. Where Arkansas's head was in coming to a game, they knew they had to win. They left their jock straps on the bus. I mean, those cats just did not show up. Very, very embarrassing for a proud Arkansas program. In fact, up where I sit, we were just surrounded by Arkansas people, and that was the quietest, meekest, most polite bunch of Hoggy fans I've ever seen in my life. As I'm jumping up and down, go, "No, you fool, that was a foul. What are you doing on the court?"
Well, I'm going to take more convincing than that, quite honestly. I absolutely believe that Alabama basketball played a great game against Arkansas, but I also believe that a lot of that was Trevor Relaford's senior night, everybody wanting to send him out with a win. I hope Alabama basketball proves me otherwise, but at this point I'm still very jaded with it, and I need to see something where Alabama goes out and doesn't just play 30 minutes of good basketball and then has a lobotomy the last 10 and loses by, you know, a solid double-digit amount to an SEC power before I'm saying Alabama has any
I'm going to tell you, and again, I have been completely dog-cussing this team all year long. Both of you guys know on this panel that I have been less than enthused, and that's putting it mildly, over the quality of basketball that we have had at Alabama this year. But I'm telling you right now, this is a sleeper team. This team, I think they could make it to Florida. I really think that we can beat Kentucky. I think they can beat anybody else. And I'll tell you the team that scares me more than anybody else, and it's not the first team. It's not LSU. It's if we have to play Tennessee. Tennessee is playing great ball right now. Any of these other slobs, Auburn, South Carolina, you know, this they truly are the wet rags that need to be returned, that left. As Mama used to say, well, you left that in the tub too long. You got to rewash that because it's stanky. You done got stanky. So those guys need to go back in the tub because they stink. But Alabama, you know, they were sharp with the way that they passed the ball. Their defense was good. God bless him, that tall white kid. Did what a 7-footer, as far as I'm concerned, is supposed to do. He didn't go out and dominate the game, but when he was in the game, he was marginally effective. But the other kids that they've got on now Shannon Hale, boys, whoo-wee, now I can understand why Kerry Clark last week just kept getting in my face saying this is a tournament team, and I told Miss Bird, I said, this kid keeps continue to play the way he's playing, and you get a decent point guard, and you put a couple of the kids around him, and you're going to see something special. He's a special ball player. Shannon Hale is just now getting his stride, and God help the SEC if he comes on fire during this tournament, because he played really good ball. Now, here's a question I got for the two of you. They win two games in this tournament, gives them 20 games. At one point, we were saying there's no way for the NIT. Do they make the NIT with 20 wins?
What would be their overall record, Bird?
They'd be 20 and 11 or 20 and 12.
I think that's wrong. Ain't that wrong, Thomas?
I don't have it pulled up in front of me, and my laptop is not as powerful as my desktop. If they get to 20 wins, though, just as a general topic, it would depend on the wins. Realize that Alabama is mired in the low 100s in RPI. So are they completely out of the realm of an NIT berth with the bump of getting a couple of wins to 20? No. But there are going to be some teams ahead of them that will really have to fall off the planet in their tournaments this week.
This time last week, I wasn't even in the realm of possibility of us making the NIT. And if we can play well against LSU, get another win there, and then one more, and I think that gives us serious consideration for the NIT. I don't think there's a snowball's chance in hell. They're not even talked about as a bubble team for the NCAA.
Alabama has to win the NCAA tournament, the SEC tournament, to go to the.
And they take them with gritted teeth. I mean, it'd be yeah we're going to put you all in. It's only because we have to, and that's in the charter and the bylaws of the of the SEC.
If Alabama wins the SEC tournament, they may still end up in the play-in game.
Yeah, and that would be okay, you know. But I did not give them a snowball's chance in hell against anybody that was halfway caliber team. And Arkansas has played some pretty decent ball. And then Arkansas just got manhandled. And, I mean, there's no – if you weren't in Coleman Coliseum and didn't see it firsthand, I don't care. There's a difference between watching it there and watching it on TV. They got embarrassed. And it was a different Alabama team that I have not seen all year long that put on a show, put on a clinic. And they weren't hitting all their shots. They weren't shooting the lights out. I mean, they were stroking enough buckets. But the key was, and we talked about this on BAMS last week, was points after turnover. And their points after turnover, they had a good defense. Arkansas couldn't handle it. And Alabama was very, very strong after getting the ball, out-rebounding Arkansas. I don't have the stats. I'm sorry, guys. I just got my computer up in front of me, and maybe I'll pull up the stats. But it was an impressive victory over a team that had everything to lose and everything to win with that victory over Alabama this past week.
Yeah, I'm beginning. I don't know if I bumped my head or what, but I'm actually beginning to like this Alabama team. Now, I heard Clark Kellogg talk about that he felt like the winner of the Alabama-LSU game would beat Kentucky on Friday. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, you got Tennessee over there with Florida, so, I mean, who knows what may happen yet in this SEC tournament. All hope is not gone, Alabama Nation. All hope is not gone. I hadn't felt no madness all season, but suddenly I'm feeling a little madness for the Alabama basketball team. And Trevor Relaford deserves, at least as Rock put it, a fighter's chance, a puncher's chance. I mean, the guy has been just tremendous. And all reports, it appears that Anthony Grant will get another year. We hate to say it, but all indications kind of point in that direction from what I'm hearing. So why not? Why not, ladies and gentlemen? Why not, Alabama and Atlanta? I'd like to hear what y'all thought of Jimmy Taylor talking about these freshmen. What's he starting to look like, Bert? I know Shannon Hale's looking like a star, but do we actually have a big man on the horizon in Alabama and Jimmy Taylor?
I just wish Jimmy Taylor had been on the floor 6 to 10 games ago with more quality minutes. I think that Jimmy Taylor came in and did a better-than-fine job. He looked very comfortable handling the ball both with his face to the basket as well as with his back to the basket. And that's what you've got to have in today's big man. You've got to have a kid that can play, you know, facing the basket, posting up on the high post or blocking down low. And let's face it, he's got a dump truck for an ass. You got to have a dump truck for an ass. You got to back that thing in there so that the little horn on it goes beep, 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 you know, to get the other team out of your way. And Sunbeam has got him a big old butt. And I'll tell you, you know, it was good to see him. Taylor had 10 points. Levi Randolph had 11 points. I got my stuff in front of me. You know, Relly had 24, Shannon Hale had 18, and Shannon's were quiet. By the way, I don't know if you guys heard this, but and this is a big deal, but Relly's game on Saturday put him in the top five all-time of Alabama scoring.
Awesome.
Did you guys know that?
Yeah, I had read a tweet where I read that. I think he needed – like 14 points in the second half. Was that correct?
That was correct.
That is awesome. I think Trevor will go down as one of the all-time greats. When you think of point guards at Alabama, of course, you think of the Terry Connors and the Enimo Watleys, but I definitely think Trevor Relaford has to be put in that conversation as one of the great point guards of all time at the University of Alabama. And it kind of distresses me a little bit because when you have a point guard of that caliber for 4 years, I do not see how you don't make a serious run in the NCAA tournament. They're showing Charles Barkley on television now and during the SEC tournament, And he does not appear to be happy, and I wouldn't be happy either if I was an Auburn fan down by 15 to South Carolina.
Well, that bald-headed cue ball, you know what? He can just pack his titty bar money up and go back to Phoenix, Arizona, where it is that he goes. Because you know what? Sir Charles is about like me. I mean, he's going to get out and he's going to do the diary of the mouth and foam about whatever he wants to foam. He should have been foaming about Tony Barbie, 3 years ago and jumping up and down and getting in that boob, Jay Jacobs' face. And I don't know if you guys heard this, and this is completely off subject, but Jay Jacobs was talking and made the comment that the 10-second rule by Saban was a joke, and I fired back. I said, "This is from the guy that hired Gene Chizik. You don't open your mouth, dude. You don't say a damn word, Jay Jacobs. You are the biggest boob on the planet." But no, Tony Barbie is not a good coach, and it's obvious that as long as Auburn puts as much stock in their basketball program as they do, which means nothing. They built that big mausoleum down there on the plains. I don't know why. You know why they won't fill it up, Legend? They don't fill it up because they won't sell beer there. If they'd sell beer in there, I think that people would actually go to the games.
Well,
go ahead, Tom.
I wanted to briefly talk about the chances that Alabama would get an NIT invite because I pulled up the RPI.
Yeah,
currently,
I'm looking at it too.
Has the number two strength of schedule, and they're 12-18. In the RPI, they're ranked 115th. They have no wins against RPI top 25 teams. If they were to beat Kentucky in the second round, they'd have one. Kentucky's currently 18. I don't see them getting past, in the 80s, and that's real tough for me to buy that they would get an NIT invite even in the 80s. Because remember, even though it's a field of 68 for the big dance, a lot of that goes to mid-majors that might be even lower than that. I mean, the play-in game is generally a weak conference with or if there's a big upset, that's where the play-in game comes from. And that's traditionally thought of as the lowest set of games. But, anything to get Alabama a little bit of momentum. But, yeah, if they won two games, they'd be 14-18 on the year, which is –
yeah, that's still way off of a 20-game season. And I don't know where Kerry came up with that. We were talking last week, and he kept saying, yeah, he's three victories from a 20-game season, or maybe average over the
probably
past.
Probably 20 games a year. That is true.
That's got to be an average of 20 games. But, I mean, that's,
right.
Winning two.
He'll have 100 wins. Wins in 5 years.
Which is very misleading when you look at a 13-18. I mean, losing 18 games is a bloodbath. They've opened up their veins, and I mean, it really is a bloodbath. It really does not speak well to the Alabama basketball team. But look, think of this, guys. The NIT, they're whores anyway. I mean, they're gonna put teams in that they feel like will sell seats. And if Alabama goes to the NIT, let me ask you guys on the panel, would you go to the game?
No.
I would in a heartbeat. After what I saw Saturday, I would if they win two more games in the tournament and it looks like they've got a heartbeat and are not on life support, I would go in a heartbeat.
What's their overall record again?
If they won the two games, it would be 14-18. It's 12-18 right now.
Yeah.
Ain't there a couple other small tournaments out there, I think?
No.
Ain't there like a MICA tournament or something? I mean, even at 14-18, I think the NIT might be.
Well, hang on. Let's look at it this way. Let's say UAB goes in and wins a couple of games. And they are, closing in on respectability with their one loss. But let's say they don't make the tournament and they get paired with Alabama. Do you think that they would sell a lot of tickets to a UAB versus Alabama NIT game?
I think they would.
Well, that's what they're about.
They'll
sell out. That's what it's all about, kids. It has nothing to do with one loss. It does kind of. But with the NIT, it's about the mean green, the dinero, el cashimola, mula, 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 baby. And, you know, that would be one that would be watched on television locally, at least in the state of Alabama. So you'd own Mobile Market, Montgomery Market, Decatur Market, Decatur-Huntsville, and the Birmingham Market. So you would own the state of Alabama in your basketball. Not outside of here, but that's cool. I'll take those five markets. It's well over a million viewers. Guys, don't call me crazy, but this could absolutely happen. We could end up seeing a UAB versus Alabama in the NIT.
Well, if we do, I would definitely go to that one.
See,
I don't know. I think it's still a shame we're talking NIT at this point of the season. It's just, I don't know. It's just, I'm kind of like Rock. I just need to see more from this basketball team. I really do.
Well, let's, you know what, guys, let's cross our fingers and hope that the same team that showed up on Saturday shows up in the tournament and not only plays close, but plays, you know, learn to win type basketball. And so we'll see. You know, it just, I think we can beat this one to death. If Paul Bear Jr. is liking Anthony Grant, then guess what? Then Anthony Grant has got a home to stay just as long as he, you know, keeps putting up mediocre numbers. I don't think he will next year, though. I'm telling you, he may have the hosses, that he may have a really superior club. The fan base is not going to realize how much we miss Relaford, though, until he finally takes off that jock strap for the last time. And the kid has been a rock at the university and has done a great job for us.
The kid that I can't pronounce his name, Obasahan?
Yeah, it's it, Obasahan.
Hey, that's pretty good. can he take over the point next year? For
no, no, he's not ready. He's not really a true point guard, and I like the kid. I think he's very scrappy, but I don't see him as being the guy that we need. Uh-oh, the seagulls just flew in. Gentlemen, I'm going to have to do a technical appearance. Give me a couple minutes, and I'll be right back. And you have got Rock and the Legend on BAMS. Take the show, if you would, sir.
All right. Give y'all some scores from the NCAA basketball. Miami beat Virginia Tech today in the second half. Georgia Tech's got a 3-point lead on Boston College in the ACC tournament. Right now in the American tournament, Rutgers has a 9-point lead on South Florida. Temple and UCF yet to come in that conference. In the Big 12, Oklahoma State has a 19-point lead on Texas Tech. TCU and Baylor later on in the Big East today in the first round. Seton Hall has a 12-point lead on Butler. In the Pac-12 today, Utah beat Washington 67-61, and Colorado beat USC 59-56. And later on tonight in the SEC, Mississippi State will play Vanderbilt. And right now at the moment, South Carolina is down 14, up 14 on Auburn. Rock, who's your surprise team other than Alabama in this SEC tournament?
I think Bird touched on it, actually. I'm interested to see what Tennessee does, and also the team that Alabama just beat in Arkansas. Arkansas, I think they have 20 wins. Hold on one second. Yeah, that's a 21-win team right now. They're 57th in the RPI, and they're kind of on the bubble. Tennessee, 19-win team, 43rd in the RPI. Probably in, but if they keep beating people, they're getting a better seed. So those two teams, they have a whole lot to play for, and I'm really interested to see how Arkansas responds to the adversity that Alabama just threw on them, and does Tennessee continue this hot streak that they've been going on to a certain extent. Those are the two I'm looking at, aside from Bama, if they can keep going.
I really like
what
I've
you,
seen.
Legend?
I really like what I've seen out of this Tennessee team. I wouldn't call them a SEC surprise, but I would call them a team that I think has a shot to make some noise in the NCAA tournament. This Tennessee team, it has all the components to be a great team. They got great big men. They got excellent wing players. and they have a very quality point guard, and they have depth coming off the bench. I think Tennessee is one of those sleeper teams as we go into this NCAA tournament that can make a serious run. I'm not talking about a Final Four, but I'm definitely seeing a Sweet 16 run. If I'm a team out there, Tennessee is a team that I do not like. Now, all the talking heads are talking Georgia, kind of because of the draw that Georgia has gotten. Georgia really will not play a top-tier team until they got to the Final Four or even possibly the finals of the SEC tournament. So a lot of people's talking Georgia, but I'm not really that big on Georgia. I have to say, from looking in, of course, I'm high on Alabama this week for some reason, but I kind of agree with you. Arkansas is a dangerous team, and who's the team that's going to disappoint in Atlanta this week, Thomas?
Oh, man. I feel like it's kind of a cheap out, but it's also probably the most accurate. I think Kentucky's going to disappoint. I don't think John Calipari has ever gotten all of those talented players to mesh. I think that's obvious. They started out preseason number one, and they finished the regular season unranked, which is the first time that's happened in something like 35 years. They're 22-9, and they're 7-5 in their last 12. So they're definitely losing percentage-wise a ton. I don't know if there's trouble in River City or it's just that the kids that are going to the NBA have mentally checked out because it is the spring semester, and why would I waste my time in school when I can be preparing for the draft? Something's wrong there, and I think they're kind of headed for the fall.
Has John Calipari lost it?
I don't think he's lost it. I think if he's lost it, it is based off of the fact that the one and done system in college basketball is not very good, and it's not a sustainable way to build a team. In basketball, more so than football, the five men on the floor are absolutely more than the sum of their parts. You might have, look at George Mason, who made that run, a few years back. They had six or seven juniors and seniors that had played together for years that just kind of had this almost sixth sense about them, and they played good, solid basketball. Well, on the other side, you have Kentucky, who you have six or seven guys that are NBA-level talents, but as even on the AAU circuit, it was kind of them. It was them. They were the go-to guy. They were the scorer. Or they were the defender or the rebounder or whatever. And you don't have a team, like a team mentality placed into Kentucky. And I don't think it's sustainable because I think Calipari goes to players and says, "Look, you can have a great year at Kentucky, then I'll get you in the NBA draft." Well, okay, coach, why would I bust my ass for you for a year? That's just me trying to think like an 18-year-old. So I think Kentucky, they've got tons of history, but it remains to be seen. Anthony Davis's year aside, which was actually, if you look at that team, not as full of one-and-dones as you'd think. That year aside, I think it's been kind of a comedy or a treatise on the failure of the one-and-done system. We'll see. That's what they play the games for.
Bird has rejoined us. Bird back in.
I just walked in on the end of it sounded to be a quite intelligent conversation, and because Thomas does sound intelligent, I'll just keep my mouth shut.
Well, just to keep you, just to update you, Bird, I was just making an argument that John Calipari's one-and-done system doesn't build a true basketball team.
I agree.
And as I believe you have said, or if you've said something like this, in basketball more so than most other sports, the team is much more than a sum of its disparate parts.
That's
and
correct.
Calipari can't get the sum to come together unless you take the Anthony Davis year into account. And Anthony Davis still has senior leadership there. So I think the system is failing.
That's why whenever you look at the bracket, go into bracketology, and of course we start when they print the big, double page thing in the newspaper, when they choose the teams for the NCAA. One of the things I like, I look at two things. I don't look at one loss. I don't look at anything else besides who's the coach, because I think there are tournament coaches that every year come into the NCAA tournament, and because they have coached there before and know how to win, I will start circling them. And the other one is find out which teams have been together for 4 years, and that's like your St. Joe's, St. Bonaventure, your Richmond Spiders, your
Butler.
Butler, yeah, that's a great example. The teams that have played together as a team and have not gone through the one-and-done process across the board may only have 80% of the talent that the kid in the one-and-done team has. But you know what they do? They're able to backdoor pass. It's like they have got eyes in the back of their heads. Why? Because they've played with each other 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the past, you know, whatever that is, 228 weeks. For 4 years, when you do that, then all of a sudden it becomes a force unto its own. And that's where I wholeheartedly agree with you on the one and done. I think Calipari's been masterful at getting kids in and getting them to play for 1 or 2 years and getting them into a team concept. And then being successful in the tournament. I give him a lot of credit for what he does and how he does it. But that is not to denigrate them. Like I say, kids like, who wants to play BYU? You know, let's see the hands go up around the country. These guys have all come back from their mission. They're all, you know, 35 years old or something like that. So they're men. They're no longer 18-year-old kids. And they've been playing together, you know, since the guy that brought the tablets to him, John Smith, I guess it's John Smith, you know, brought the tablets to them. So it's, again, it just goes to show that it's not always the teams with the greatest talent. It's the teams that are able to play together, force the other team into doing things that the other team does not want to do, and then just watch that little grain of sand of discontent start to get under the burr of the saddle of the player you're playing against, and then taking advantage of that. And it's as much a mind game as anything. So, and especially at this level in college, these kids can still be motivated. You know, you can still go in with a coach at halftime in a pep talk and do it for good old Chirut, you know, whereas you don't have that in the NBA. In the NBA, it's a profession. There's no winning it for the Crimson Tide, so to speak.
Talent-wise, right. Kentucky has as much talent as anybody in the nation. So it's not out of the realm of possibilities that they can make a run. But I have to agree with Bird and Thomas. I do not see it happening, not in the least.
I'll do
you
one
better.
I think Kentucky has more talent than anybody. And if you look purely at NBA transition ability, yes, Kansas is stacked with Wiggins and Joel Embiid, who Embiid's unbelievable. I hope his back – he's fun to watch. I hope his back does not permanently derail him. But Kentucky just has talent everywhere. They just haven't melded it. Now, Legend, I do kind of want to counter your point a little bit, or just give you a little different perspective. Kentucky's a scary team to play because on any given night, the pieces can fall together, and it's just a storm that you cannot weather. But it's too inconsistent to say it's going to happen more than once or twice in a given
run through a tournament. That's right. And it's almost like they forget where they just came from after they do the storm. It's like they get amnesia. Because I've said, you banged it right in the middle of the nail, Thomas. They're so talented, and once they all click at the same time and become a team, it's poetry. It's poetry on the hardwood. But they get through that, and all of a sudden they have their storm, and then they kind of – they're asleep at the wheel again. They're playing country music, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think what they lack is a true point guard. I think that's the one thing that Kentucky lacks is a point guard to run the show. They don't have a John Wall. They don't have that type of player to run the show anymore down there. And while the Harrison brothers do appear to be good players, they appear to lack that just ability to take the team and put them where they belong. And the most important position this time of the year on the court is the guard play. And I think Kentucky lacks that just a little bit with the Harrison twins, though highly recruited, still true freshmen and not quite sure they're ready to match up with some of the other point guards and two guards that they will see in the NCAA tournament. But we will see. We will see. That's why they call it the madness. You never know what's liable to happen. And, Thomas, you would have to agree, this NCAA field is more wide open this year possibly than any other time in the history of the NCAA.
I think there are good teams from the number one overall. I think any team, barring some crazy run, because I can't anticipate that, I think any team from probably the number one overall seed down into the sixes has a very solid chance. It just depends on how things are put together. I know I wouldn't want to play Wichita State, even though they're a mid-major.
That brings up a good question. Wichita State, a team I got to see play Sunday, this is a team with extraordinary talent. I don't care what league you would put them in. They possibly wouldn't be undefeated. The first college team to go undefeated since the 90-91 Las Vegas team with Greg Anthony and Stacey Allman and Larry Johnson. But I seen this team play Sunday, seen them last year. And when you look at this Wichita State team with Cotton and Early and the point guard who was the player of the year in that conference, I mean, this is a team who went to the Final Four last year. And is this a team that can win it all, Thomas?
Absolutely. You have a great coach, and I believe his name is Greg Marshall.
Yep.
Going undefeated through the regular season and the conference tournament, like you said, it hasn't happened in 20 years. There's a reason for that. It is very difficult to do, but they accomplished it. I don't care what competition they're playing against. That's an accomplishment to win 34 straight games. Then you look at what really wins in the tournament. You have a good coach in Marshall, like I said. You have a good point guard in that kid whose name escapes me. You have some complimentary pieces in Early and Cotton. And you have a group, you have someone that when the crunch time and the point guard, with the point guard, he can go get you that basket or get you that entry pass for that key moment. I think the team is scary because they're well coached. They have a lot of veteran talent, and they do what wins in the NCAA tournament well. And that's all you can ask for in a basketball team. Then it's just a question of letting the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, and David Baker, the forward, he is kind of the glue to that team. They appear to have all the pieces. And again, kind of like I was saying about Tennessee, when you look at Wichita State, yeah, I mean, you really cannot argue with the components that they put on the court because they have the quality big man. As Bird said, they have the big man with the ass so wide. I forgot how he put it. But then they got the good forwards, and they have the good guard play. So, I mean, everything is there to win the NCAA tournament. If you put them against Florida in the final, favor in that game.
Me personally, I still would have to go with Florida. I realize that they're 29-2 versus 34-0 right now, but Florida hasn't lost in forever, and the two losses that they had were not with their entire roster. I think Florida, barring a substantial implosion, will be the number one overall seed, and obviously that comes with certain expectations, but Billy Donovan has been there and done that. He'll know how to manage all of that. And, you know, we're talking about what it takes to succeed. Scotty Wilbekin, Patrick Young, et cetera, guys that have been there, they're senior leaders. They've got the stuff, too. I mean, that would be – I think that game would be wild, and I would love to watch it. Best answer for you.
As we go into this madness, and ladies and gentlemen, you're on BAMS Radio tonight, and you're welcome to call in at 714-510-3707. If you can't tell by now, we have a case of the madness. Yes, that one time of the year when we take a small break from Alabama football, and not to say we won't talk Alabama football, but that one time of the year. but it's just a situation where we got a little madness on our hands tonight. I'm hanging out with Thomas Watt. Bird has taken a small break. Me and Thomas is hanging out. You're welcome to call in. And Thomas, as we head into this tournament, we've talked about the SEC, but who's some of the teams nationally that you're looking at that might surprise other than the Wichita States and the Florida when we crank this baby up next Thursday?
Well, this team has been stumbling as it goes to the finish, but I want to talk about how they play defense. And it's Syracuse. Syracuse is such a difficult team to play because now, if you look at college, it's a lot of matchup, man-to-man, or matchup zone. Well, Syracuse doesn't do that. They have run the same defense for the past 20 years under Jimmy Boeheim. And it's a 2-3 zone that uses a monster center to pack the middle, and they force your guards to make shots. Now, if shots start falling, you can beat Syracuse. But it's almost like the triple option offense in football. You don't play against a 2-3 zone very much anymore. So it's one of those things where can you change offensive tendencies in the 5 days, 2 days, however many days you have before you play a Syracuse Orange team that you've been working on for 9 months? I don't think so. And obviously Syracuse has the horses. They were undefeated until an inexplicable loss to Boston College. Boston College shot from three like you wouldn't believe. But, you know, this team definitely has the horses. So the way they play is truly something worth keeping an eye on. Another team you can look at, and this is just because I absolutely love their coach, is Michigan State. I think Tom Izzo is bar none the best coach in the country.
One of the top five.
System,
yeah.
Well, okay. Okay, you're splitting hairs. Let me put it to you that way.
We really are. I mean, he might be one. You know, anyway.
No, I understand what you're saying. You've just got a guy who has consistently not had that top five-star talent, but he's built teams. He's built teams around guys that play well together, they play focused, and he's got a system. The system works. What was the statistic that for the past, like, 7 or 8 years, every one of Tom Izzo's players has been to a Final Four or been to a Sweet 16
yeah.
or something?
Sweet.
It's something where it's a statistic like that, which basically speaks to Tom Izzo knows what to do come tournament time. He doesn't need a Carmelo Anthony or a LeBron James-type transcendent player to get there. He can get there with what he's got, and that's important. That is absolutely important for the tournament. And, you know, those are a couple of teams that if I'm just spitballing against the wall because of who they have in terms of style or in terms of coach, it's just an edge. It's an edge that you can't debate. It's almost called the Krzyzewski factor would be the best way to put it.
Yeah.
I like that. Bird has rejoined us, and we'll get Bird's take. Bird, as we head into the madness, talking about the March Madness, who's some of the teams nationally that you think will surprise once the tournament kicks off next week?
I don't think there are going to be a lot of surprises, actually. I think that the teams are already pretty much loaded up that are going to, take command of the tournament. I think Cincinnati has an extra good club. I think that Florida is a Final Four team. Out of the Atlantic, or what do they call it, the American Conference
now.
The A-10. You've got four or five teams in that particular conference that can play some good basketball. Out west, we don't see enough of the Western teams. I think UCLA has had a good year and has got some spectacular kids. And guys, forgive me, I don't know if it's Arizona or Arizona State. One of those two teams is a top four team.
Arizona. Yeah.
They dropped a weird one last week, but they have like a freshman player of the year candidate on their team. I don't remember his name, but I know he's out there.
I saw them play at the first of the year, and of course, it's one of those nights that you know they bring those guys on at like 2 a.m. And I was actually quite impressed. It was a kind of a quality, you know, preseason type game, or not preseason, before they got into their conference play. And that's a good team, guys. So outside of that, two or three teams out of the West, I never have a lot of confidence in teams from the West having the wherewithal to make a deep run into the tournament. They just don't have enough quality basketball out there to push each other to the wall. Whereas you get in the East Coast and in the Big Ten, you know, any top five of any of those schools could beat any top five from the western part of the country just about 80% of the time.
I like it. I kind of agree with Bird, Thomas. I think this might be an NCAA tournament where the top seeds kind of dominate.
Yeah, I don't look for any big surprises this year, guys. But, I mean, you know, that's the beauty of the tournament. First day, let's face it, there is going to be somebody that's going to stub their toe, and somebody's going to come out and shoot 70% from the field. And I hate to say it, but it'll be a bunch of white guys. I mean, it makes it sound like it's a racist comment. It's not a racist comment, because typically a bunch of, you know, burr haircut white guys with funny last names, you know, they're not as athletic. They don't move as well on the floor as a lot of the black kids do. And you sit there, boy, I'm getting myself in trouble on this one. legends
I'm just letting you hang yourself on this.
Yeah, I know. It's just it's.
I'm in a life raft.
But I sit and watch. I sit like a BYU, and I just cross and I shake my head and go, these guys just look dorky and goofy, you know, against a team like Kansas that is not dorky and goofy. But then that's what will happen. You'll have a bunch of these guys that'll come out of nowhere you know, where they've sat in their daddy's farm and shot through a pea tube, and you know, little stories like that. And it'll happen. Somebody on that first day in that first field of 32 is going to get knocked out, and it'll be by, you know, David and Goliath. The Goliath will go down.
Sure. Auburn down now 16 with 9 minutes and 25 seconds to go in the opener in the Georgia Dome, and of course, Charles Barkley is not helping at all by supporting them, and
not looking quite as natty tonight, I might say. Sir Charles is not wearing a suit and tie, and has a slip over, some sort of sweater polo that's definitely been stretched out of shape. So anyway, not to be commentarying on.
Well, guys, let me go on and jump off. I need to go to dinner with this group, unfortunately. But I hope to be back. I might be back for the Drew part of the show.
Maybe.
But
where are they taking you?
Oh, just some ramen place that's right by the headquarters of the company. It's nothing special, but it's meeting with a bunch of the recruiters that I've interacted with. So,
well,
you know, informal, good time.
Let me go check the front door of the birdcage. And good luck to you, Thomas. If we see you later, we see you later. If we don't, we don't.
All right, guys. If you don't see me, have a good evening and roll tide.
All right. Thomas Watt leaving us and Bird leaving us. So you got the legend here for a few minutes. Currently watching the Auburn Tigers struggle in the second half, down 59-45 to South Carolina. We've been talking to March Madness tonight here on BAMS Radio, and just looking now at the bracketology that's coming out, four teams, Arkansas, Georgia, Missouri, and Tennessee is on the bubble, according to them. And we got Mr. Kerry Clark coming.
it's that puke inside of pumpkin orange. And I don't like pumpkins. So I really don't like Tennessee, man. I can't stress that enough, man. They losers, they sore losers. I hate them.
Go. I'm going to add you to it. Carrie should be on the call. Okay, we're just about back live. This is the first. We had a technical difficulty and got that resolved. Carrie, you there with us? As he eats chips?
Yep.
Yep.
Is the break over?
You know what? I don't know if it is or not. I was having to do some very quick stepping around to get this thing going again.
Okay.
Yeah. I got one more I want to put on it.
But normally I'd be hearing the commercials right now.
Normally, and that's we didn't have a break because we were not in the mode to have it.
Okay.
Yeah. You were listening to a private call between yourself and Legend. You guys were broadcasting to yourself.
Wow, they missed some good stuff.
You're going to have to repeat every bit of that.
Well, if he asks the same questions, I will. My story, and I'm sticking to it.
That's your story and sticking to it.
So are we live right now?
We are live right now, and I'm trying to get...
One of our more professional shows here tonight.
This is absolutely BAMS at his finest.
You're listening to BAMS Radio.
Well, it's what you get when Rock Watts goes off to dinner, who's our board guy, you know, and it's like, oh, and I've got the board laying in Legend's lap as I go... see an old army friend.
Always a bad move to put the board in Legend's hand. They missed some good radio, didn't they, Gary?
They did, man.
Well,
classic conversation between the bird and the CC Bama.
The Legend and the CC Bama. Well, we have to give props to Thomas. I'm looking forward to him perhaps becoming gainfully employed in Los Angeles, California. You got to be proud for him. So,
I'm looking forward to the week when we finally run our promo from Deontay Wilder.
Me too. And you know, it's coming. I'm going to surprise you with that.
All right, okay.
That's going to be one of those that you get surprised with. You know what, guys? I'm going to play a real 5-second ID. Just make sure I've got control of the board. And once we do that, we can jump back into it. We did have a caller that had called in, a 334 caller, and unfortunately was not able to put you on live with BAMS. Caller, if you want to call back, I think we've got that taken care of. But let's run this real quick ID, and we'll be right back.
This is Mark Ingram on BAMS Radio. Roll Tide, roll.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate that, brother. It's not often that you can get a New Orleans Saint, you know, just drop his plate of food down there in New Orleans and give you a call.
This is Mark Ingram on BAMS Radio. Roll Tide, roll.
All right, Mark. We know. Thanks.
You want y'all to think he was trying to run that twice in a row.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in a loop.
It's in a loop. No, it's Mark just being, you know, quit bugging us, Mark. I know you love us, but come on.
You know, Mark got some bad news today.
What was that?
It was looking like that he was going to be the man for the Saints next year.
Yeah,
they were going to get rid of Sproles and Pierre Thomas. Well, they did half that. They got rid of Sproles, but they re-signed Pierre Thomas for 2 years today. So Mark is not the automatic stud starter getting all the carries that maybe we thought he was a week ago. But my hope is that he gets out of New Orleans. The Saints are clearly the Auburn of the National Football League, always have been, always will be. All just, you know, the same entitled fan base and the same lack of championships. And I'm hoping that Mark can get out of there and get to a team that will let him run the ball 20, 25 times a game. They never will there. They never will. So,
Green Bay, wouldn't you love to see him at Green Bay?
Well, they got Eddie Lacy.
But I'm saying, wouldn't you have loved to have seen him at Green Bay?
Oh, sure, back in the day, yeah.
Yeah. Or even with, you know who he'd go win well
with? Trent got some good news today because the Colts got rid of Donald, whatever his name is, their other running back. So the Colts got rid of him, and now Trent's going to be the man for the Colts this fall. So as good a news as Trent got, Mark just got the mediocre news. So Trent will probably get more carries than Mark this year.
Probably.
Trent was a major disappointment last year with the Colts.
He was?
I hope so, the Colts.
Is that the man who's muted?
Are you muted?
Legend is.
Yeah, Legend, you're muted here. Hand me the mic. I'll get Legend back on. We are doing this. Normally we're down in the studio. The studio is a wreck. There you go.
Testing. Testing.
Oh, I'm getting it ready for you, Kerry.
Testing.
You and Legend get the BK brownies tonight, not me. Nice.
we get the brownies. Now we got everybody
behind the Kerry Clark story.
Oh, Lord.
Kerry walks upstairs, and BK's been cooking brownies, and she walks over and says, "So do you want a brownie?" And it was Kerry's like, "Huh? What are you talking about?" And I think she cuts them big, too, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had milk, and it was like they were like just out of the oven. It was like, wow.
Yeah, they were gooey. They were
nice, man. Nice and warm.
Were they the good kind of brownie?
Oh, yeah.
They were just regular, I could sell them on the street brownies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So everybody missed that wonderful conversation that I had with Legend for about 12, 13 minutes about spring training. So I guess we can just start over.
I would repeat it since I was gone as well. I've got an Army buddy that is in town and spending the night with me. So, getting him settled and seeing Miss Bird for the first time kind of today. So I took my 12 minutes of life, jammed it in there in the middle of the BAMS radio show. I mean, talk about a guy multitasking. But
Bird is an impressive man, I have to say. When I grow up, I want to be like Bird.
God, here it comes. he's happy because I gave him a business card. So.
Oh, yes. I got my own business cards now, Kerry, with my own folder. Bam's getting big time, brother. We finna go out Friday and shake hands and kiss babies and take pictures with the community.
Actually, we are having a kind of a fun day tomorrow. We've been invited down to the Mobile area with Danny Sheridan. Have lunch with Danny, and two of our good advertisers are coming along. And so it's kind of a nice thing for our advertisers.
That'd be Billy and Chuck.
It would be Billy and Chuck.
Yeah, I keep up.
You do. We're all together, but it's fun because it's Danny on the air is not quite the raconteur that he is when it's when you've got up close and personal. So we're going back room and
that mean he cusses
it down.
More?
Yeah, gonna have the Godfather will have his bodyguards there, and
of course he will,
and pat me down and frisk me. But it will be a lot of fun, and we. Are blessed to have the great advertisers that we do at BAM, so we appreciate you guys a whole lot.
They're great friends, too.
Well, you know what's nice, Kerry, is that this group of people has all come to know each other and like each other and help each other out. And there's stuff that happens, folks, behind the scenes that, we could write a book about as far as BAM's listeners helping BAM's listeners. Through some tough times in life, and it's ingratiating to me. Is like, do you get paid for this? No, we don't get paid. But what we've been able to do is have a positive outreach to a lot of people. We're not shy about sharing our love of Jesus Christ on here, and I think it's hard for other programs to do that. And it's in a lot of ways, it's a very, very special group of people that have banded together that love Alabama, Alabama sports, and Alabama football, primarily. But bottom line is that behind the scenes, there's an awful lot that's very, very nice and heartwarming that goes on, and BAMS is a fulcrum for that. So,
speaking of Jesus, that brought to mind one of the greater comebacks I've ever come up with in my life. And Legend, you'll appreciate this. Time to time, Auburn people come up to me and say, "Hey, man, You know God must be an Auburn Tiger because the sun's orange and the sky's blue, right? War Eagle. And I look at him in his face. You know what I tell him, legend?
Let's hear it.
I tell him, I don't know about you, but I was saved by the crimson blood of Jesus, and it washed me white as snow. Hallelujah.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
There's a fist bump going on in the birdcage right now.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
They look at me, and they go, oh, yeah, all right, then. Good to see you, brother.
It's hard to trump that one, CC.
Hallelujah.
By the way, did our boy up north get all that gear that I sent him? I sent him a big old box of high-tech stuff that I hope...
I have not heard yet. He didn't. You know, we have to ask him, I guess.
He should have gotten it yesterday, so I'm hoping that he got it, and all he did was do a plug and play, and when we get the Drew on tonight, we get the high-volume Delphonic RCA Victor Drew that we know.
Well, it does beat the Walmart cell phone, Drew. So hopefully we will get that. I don't know. I haven't heard how all that came out, but I probably should track my phone down and text the boy here during the next break.
That would be a good thing. And
but we got plenty to talk about between now and
the next. You know what? You guys, I jumped in the middle of your reiteration of your what you guys were talking to each other.
I wonder if Legend could remember all them questions he asked.
Oh, man, I was on a roll. The Bams Nation just missed the best 12 minutes of radio ever by the legend, and I had a mute.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't I do this?
Bird had us on mute.
I'll put myself on mute this time, and you guys go too. How about that?
All right, let's crank it up again for the Bams Nation. We'll go back. We're talking Alabama football, and I'm talking to my good friend Kerry Clark, who is one of the foremost of knowledge individuals in the country when it comes to this subject. And we're talking spring football because, as my good friend was telling me, when does it start, Kerry?
It starts Saturday. And my part-time employer, scout.com, will have a whole lot of coverage on it every day they practice. And there's so many positions up for grabs. And like I said earlier, you know, it's going to be an oddity, legend, in that the starting two quarterbacks in the 8A game are not likely to be the starting quarterback this fall with the transfer from Florida State of Jacob Coker. We think he'll win the job, if not by the West Virginia game, then certainly by the second or third game of the year. But I think he'll probably start the West Virginia game. So the 8A game will match up probably Blake Sims, and I'll go out on a limb and say Cooper Bateman. Or maybe Alec Morris, but one of those two against Blake Sims. And neither one of those guys is probably going to be the starter full-time this fall, which is odd. But there's a whole lot of other positions that are up for grabs too, Legend.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that quarterback position. Bateman Cooper came in highly recruited. Alex Morris came in highly recruited. And, of course, Blake Sims was the backup last year. And, of course, you have the highly touted freshman down there from Oklahoma. Do you see any of these four quarterbacks maybe shocking the Bama Nation and taking over the starting job this year? Or do you believe it's of these four guys, this will be something that will come down the line a little bit?
I think it'll come down the line. Of course, now this fall is the last chance for Blake Sims. He's going to be a senior. I think for the other guys, particularly Bateman and Morris, if Morris sticks it out past spring, who knows if he will, we'll see. Bateman is the guy that really intrigues me. The number one quarterback when it's all said and done is going to be Jacob Coker, barring some kind of crazy injury or something like that, but I don't foresee that. So the battle at A-Day really is going to be for the number two job. No coach is going to admit that publicly, but they know deep down that the reason they got Jacob Coker not only just to transfer but to sign a scholarship is to be the starting quarterback the next 2 years, University of Alabama. So A-Day is going to be really a battle for number two. What I'm hoping to see is that, and I mentioned this earlier when we were off, but I hope that Lane Kiffin will put in a wildcat package that he'll use at least once a half, where Blake Sims will give Coker at least a one-play relief and run the read option or run the ball or throw the ball to the tight end, something that we hadn't seen completely out of Blake in a situation where the game was on the line. We've seen him go in there and run that package, but we've never seen it like in a 7-7 game in the first quarter against Tennessee or something. And that's what I want to see. I want to see them utilize his talents because he's got very quick feet. He's got a halfway decent arm. When the guy's open, he'll hit him. And he can run the ball. And he knows when to hand it off, knows when to pitch it. That's what I'm hoping, one thing that I think Kiffin will do. Blake Sims, he might be the backup. But I'm told, legend, that when he was viewing our practices lead up to the bowl game, that Lane Kiffin was very, very, very complimentary of Cooper Bateman, a guy who really didn't have a lot of success throwing the ball back in August or even in the spring. But something happened, and he changed his technique, his delivery, his release, something. And now he's throwing the ball a lot better, and he's always been a good runner. He can run the ball about like Colin Kaepernick. But the question was, could he hit an open man? And apparently he's getting to the point where he can. So Cooper Bateman is a guy that could be a weapon even after Coker leaves, because Cooper's only going to be a redshirt freshman this fall, whereas Coker will be a redshirt junior this fall. So watch out for Bateman. And Alec Morris, as I pointed out, had a great 8A game. Came very close to throwing the winning touchdown pass, a ball maybe Chris Black should have caught or could have caught, but it didn't catch it. So something happened to Morris where it appeared like maybe he's digressed some. But Bateman, from all accounts, has progressed. So there's a lot of talent. And Cornwell's a very good ball player. So there's a lot of talent down there at quarterback right now. But when it's all said and done, it's going to be Jacob Coker. They're battling for number two right now.
All right, guys, I got a caller on hold. Caller just called in, Kerry. Shall we take the call, put him on hold live?
Let's do it.
Skype call. It's not a Skype call, is it?
No.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and take it.
You're live on BAMS. Who do we have?
This is Stephen M. Smith.
There you go.
Hey. What's going on, my friend? What's going on?
I'm doing just fine, and you?
It's an honor to have you back. You was on last week when we had Brad Redisi on, and Stephen brought the thunder last week, Hey, Stephen, before you ask your question tonight, tell everybody about your Twitter site. I read it quite often, and it's one of the best Twitter sites on the Twitter feed there. Tell everybody what your Twitter site is.
My pleasure. And my Twitter site is it's Stephen M. Smith, but the name is at ESPN_future. That's Stephen M. Smith at ESPN_future.
Like it. You always have some of the best information out there on Twitter. I love reading it. What you got for us tonight, my friend?
Well, I just wanted to comment on what you guys were discussing earlier about the NCAA tournament. The two teams that I'm really high on going in, with being the Florida Gators, Billy Donovan has done a phenomenal job with Florida. And you got players like Scotty Wilbekin and Patrick Young, and also Michael Frazier II, who is a very streaky three-point shooter. You got a lot of talent around Florida like Billy Donovan has. You can't go wrong with Florida and then with Kansas, not just with Andrew Wiggins, of course. Hopefully Joel Embiid is able to come back from his back injury. But you also have Perry Ellis and Nadir Tharp, who's pretty good from behind the three-point line. So I love Florida and Kansas to go deep in the NCAA tournament. With Oklahoma State, DeMarcus Smart is a phenomenal player, as well as Markel Brown and Brian Nash. It's kind of – they all have the same juice, the same power that they had last season, because remember Oklahoma State had some more shooters to add some depth in that bench last season. So I don't really see Oklahoma State. The two teams I'm really looking forward to see make a big run would be Kansas and also Florida. Really love to see Wichita State get to the Sweet 16, because as you guys mentioned, Clay Anthony earlier, Ron Baker, the glue to that basketball team. But the two teams I'm high on, it's going to be Florida and Kansas.
Oh, I like that. Do you see Kentucky doing anything? I know you're very knowledgeable from reading your tweets and everything. What do you think about the Wildcats? We were talking about them tonight.
When it comes down to Kentucky, imagine when John Calipari is the blessing and the curse of the one and done system that's kind of playing on Kentucky. The blessing is you get a chance to recruit all these top-class guys with a lot of skill, a lot of talent, and a lot of measurables. The curse is you get together on one team for one season, they haven't played with each other all. The chemistry isn't developed. the mindset of being on one team isn't quite developed yet, versus you got teams like Michigan State, you got teams like Florida, who have juniors and seniors that have played a long time, so the chemistry has developed. Now, as Bert mentioned earlier on the show, Jahtai Perry is the go-to guy to bring these high school players in and make them become one-and-done stars. He's done a great job of that. But when you have just a group of players that come together and they don't get that team aspect and they don't get that chemistry and gel well together, but just a couple of players just throwing balls into the basket and there's no chemistry, there's nothing good going to come of that. Kentucky's going to try to make a run. I can see them in the Sweet 16, possibly the Elite Eight, but that's as far as I see them going. They don't have that team aspect. As you mentioned, Legend, the Harrison twins, Andrew and Aaron Harrison, they can play some ball. Both of them, freaks of nature, both are 6'6". They can play some ball, but I don't see the true guard play to really take over the game. We don't have that killer instinct to know, I got to turn it on now, put the team on my back and take over the game. The killer instinct on that team happens to be Julius Randle. He's the killer instinct, and when Willie Cauley-Stein finally gets it, he can be the killer instinct. But the Harrison twins, they're kind of going through the motions. They have their nights where it's like Golden State of college basketball, and Golden State, when they have Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson, when the stars align, they're both knocking down threes for Golden State. That's what Kentucky is. The stars have to be constantly aligned for Kentucky to really have a big-time night.
Hey, Steve, we've got another caller on hold. You want to sit tight with us, and we'll bring them on live?
That's just fine.
I'm going to – 334, you're on live with BAMS. Who do we have? Hello, 799. Well, I know we've got Kerry. I know we've got Legend. I know we've got the Bird. I know we've got Steven. Which one of you's names didn't I just call? I'm gonna put 799 back on hold then.
It might be just somebody listening to the show tonight. Sometimes
folks, they'll call in and
they'll listen on their phone.
Sorry, Stephen, you were in the middle of a great soliloquy. You had Shakespearean prowess at that point.
Stephen's becoming our great caller to BAMS Radio. I'm really impressed with his knowledge of sports.
Yeah, I've been following on Twitter as well, and you bring the lumber, Steven. You know your stuff. You do a lot of homework.
Steven, what do you think of Alabama's chances this week in Atlanta? I know you have.
Well, let's get both Kerry and Steven.
Kerry drops off when we start talking basketball.
Kerry knows his basketball.
I'll be glad to talk. It's just not going to be a lot of positive.
Yeah, Kerry came on tonight. The first thing he said was, all right, let's get started on the football now.
Kerry, you saw that game I saw Saturday. Were you not impressed?
Oh, very, very impressed. I just was wondering where it had been the rest of the year.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah, Saturday was great. Sent Trevor out the right way. Soundly defeated an overrated Arkansas team. Grant got his 99th win at Alabama, and it was good. They didn't have enough people there to salute Trevor, I didn't think. But I fought some of that with the University of Alabama scheduling baseball and softball to play the same time as basketball. I didn't
like
that.
Was stupid.
That was kind of piss poor if you ask me. But nobody did. But it was a fun game, 25-point win. And Legend asked me why we thought we were on there and we weren't. If I thought Alabama could do any damage in Atlanta, and what I told him, Stephen, was I thought Alabama had a shot against LSU, but probably not so much against Kentucky.
When I look at the Alabama basketball team, guys, I see a team that has the talent, but they wait to the last minute to throw it all together. I mean, you look at they compete with Duke earlier this year. They compete with Wichita State and was basically one rebound away from possibly securing that game. But in the SEC tournament, I can see Bama making a little run in this tournament, but I saw Trevor Rutherford, the guy being Retno Bassahan and Shannon Head have to step up. Retno Bassahan is one of the
Levi
streaky...
Randolph, too.
Randolph's going to step up, too, Stephen. Yeah.
They're not going to come up to the defensive offensive run of Boston. He's one of the streakiest, hot, cold players ever. He's a scrappy guy to get to the basket and can make things happen, but he has to be a consistent plug on that team. Going to Levi Randolph, he was in the shell for the majority of the season and didn't really start to come out of it until, I want to say, the Missouri game where he put up 33 points. And I was like, well, this is good offseason. So Levi Randolph, he's going to really have to step up in this tournament and show that the last couple of games have not been a fluke, but that he can be a really productive player on his Alabama basketball team. Number three, now Shannon Hildren, not a surprise, could have a three-point line. He's going to have to continue some of his game. And then for Jimmy Taylor, I want to see him box out. He has to learn how to box out and how to be that big man in the post, especially with the absence of Nick Jacobs. Nick Jacobs will be back on the team next season, but while he's not there, Jimmy Taylor has got to be able to box out in the post and really force the issue, get shots in the paint, develop a post game, whether it's a baby hook shot or if it's a turnaround, 12 to 15 foot jumper, develop a post game in the paint. And for Alabama, free throw shooting. Bama has struggled at the line, even though it's Trevor Rumford starting to miss a few shots at the charity strike. Bama has got to make free throws in the event where they have a lead, and to be able to ice the game away. Bama has got to make the free ones.
Now, I just
said something that I thought was very intriguing, Stephen. Are you just speculating that Jacobs is back next year, or is that source information? I don't know.
That is sort of information. He will be back next season. He took a short leave up on the team, but next season he will be back on.
Okay.
You also hear what I did is that the biggest problem, not only problem, but the biggest problem was class attendance.
What's that, sir?
Did we lose Kerry?
No, Kerry's still on. No, Stephen, Kerry's question.
Having,
yeah, Stephen.
Was maybe he was missing some classes.
That's Jacob's problem.
That was one of the issues. Classes was one of the issues. I think he and Anthony Grant were not seeing eye to eye or some things on the court, but I think 80% of the rough class issues.
So Grant wanted to get more than 2 rebounds a game, huh?
Yes, sir.
You 6'8", 240, you got to be getting more than 3.5 or whatever he was getting. He's got to hit the glass a lot. If he is back, and I hope Stephen's right, going to have to hit the glass like a wild man. But, you know, there's been some recruits emerge for the late basketball signing period that are a little surprising and pleasant. So we may have some good news in April on basketball recruiting to go with the 3 they signed in the fall.
Kerry, after watching this team Saturday, I completely retract my there's no way they'll make the NCAA next year.
Yeah, I thought you might.
Yeah, it was – you know, it's like a light switch flipped on. I hit my wife in the knee and I said, "Baby, where's this team been all year long? My goodness, you could flip our schedule upside down and we'd be running at 18-12 or 20-8. You know, we'd be a 20 game winner."
I mean, Bert, they played Florida twice, lost by 6 and lost by 9. And as Stephen accurately pointed out, Florida's probably a Final Four team this year. We're not that far off. You hate to use the old Mike Shula, "We're close," but we are.
Yeah. And you know what? It all came together on Saturday.
What's the deal with the 2 junior college players coming in, Kerry?
Well, are you talking about the guys that are sitting out this year?
Yes.
Okay. They're actually D1 transfers, but they might as well be junior college guys.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
They didn't get to play.
Ricky Tarrant. Is,
and Michael Kessens.
Yeah, it was.
Now, Ricky was number 2 behind Trevor Lacy for the Alabama Mr. Basketball his senior year at Pleasant Grove.
Nice.
He spent 2 years at Tulane in New Orleans as a starting point guard, but he was homesick and he wanted to come home and he saw an opportunity and Grant said, "Come on, we'll take you." So he's sitting out this year, and what he did was, by being the scout team point guard this year, legend, he made Trevor Relford a better ball player.
Yeah.
And the other guy, now Ricky is taller than Trevor. He's about 6'2". And in some ways his game is a little like Lacy. maybe not quite the shooter, but probably a little quicker than Lacy. He's a true point guard, though. The other guy that's sitting out is about 6'9", about 225, 230. His name is Michael Kessens. He played for a little school in Texas called Longwood, but he played one game as a true freshman legend against an SEC team. And against LSU, we had big old boys in the paint, as Stephen will attest, like Johnny O'Brien. Michael Kessens scored 17 points and had 14 rebounds. So he won't shy away from SEC competition. He would have started this year if he'd been eligible. He will start next year. He's about 6'9", maybe 6'9½". And then they're recruiting a couple of other 6'7", 6'8", guys for the late period they're trying to sign. So they're going to be better, and they will be in the tournament next year. I think the biggest question is what kind of seed they'll get and if they'll be able to win a game. Because I think that the goal needs to be not just to make the tournament, but to at least win the first-round game next year.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Steven, what else you got for us tonight, my friend?
Well, I want to touch back on the Blake Sims situation here for Alabama football. We talked about Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin's pedigree, he was at USC as the quarterback coach, the offensive coordinator, and recruiter from 2003 to 2005. Lane Kiffin is 22-3. I mean, the guy produced 3,000-yard passes, Matt Leiner, John David Booney, and Matt Barkley. He put in 4 1,000-yard receivers, Dwayne Jarrett, Steve Smith, Robert Woods, and Marquise Lee. And we know 2 1,000-yard rushers, and Reggie Bush, and, of course, Lindell White. Lane Kiffin knows how to recruit, and at this point he has just as much talent, if not more, in Alabama than he had at USC. When you look at Blake Sims, the one thing that has burned Alabama these past two seasons have been dual threat quarterbacks, i.e. Nick Marshall, Johnny Manziel, and of course Oklahoma's Trevor Knight. When you look at Blake Sims, he has the mobility. The mobility's there. If they can get Blake Sims into some quarterback camps and really develop some confidence in his arm, there's a line for Blake Sims on the team. Now, he may not know it, and the organization may not know it, there's a role on this team for Blake Sims. He just has to home in on it.
You see Blake Sims as a threat to be the starting quarterback next year?
I don't think he'll be the starting quarterback next year. I think Kiffin's going to use him more as the emergency-style guy, since Blake Sims knows a lot of the system. I feel like he'll be used as an emergency-style quarterback. He'll be put in a lot of wildcat, zone read, zone option situations. But I feel like if he can develop his arm strength in camps, he can be a great use passing the ball when he does in the game. Because as we saw a lot of this past season, when Blakeson's getting the game, he's prone to run more. Now, with the short intermediate routes, he's great with, when it comes down to the timing routes in Alabama, they love to run those cross-timing routes with O.J. Howard and a lot of the receivers they have with, of course, DeAndre White, Christian Jones, and Amari Cooper. They love to run those long timing routes, those post routes to the inside, those stop-and-go routes, and also this post routes to the outside, along with some back shoulder throws. So the short intermediate route seems is great on, but with the routes that take some time and need the arm strength, I think if he gets himself into some camps to really home in on his arm strength and his decision-making with the football on those routes, he can be of some use when he does get some snaps in the game. He's going to get some snaps. Sims will be a senior next season, so he's going to get some snaps. The question is, can he develop the arm strength?
I like it.
Needs a little work on his accuracy, too. But he showed against Georgia State that he can run the whole offensive package, and that's a good thing. But I agree with you, Stephen. I think that he'll be used more as a wildcat quarterback in some situations where the game is still on the line, where he wasn't in that situation in the past. I think Kiffin will have the nads to go ahead and use him in a first quarter, second quarter of a tight SEC game as a short yardage or a wildcat-type quarterback. I think that you'll see that more this year than you ever have before.
I like it. When we get talking about Alabama football, I get pumped up. I'm ready to hear Nick Saban give a speech, run through the door.
Let me get him on the phone.
Nick on his private line, though, Burr.
All right.
Call Rob Easy. I'll give him a talk like Nick.
Hey, Stephen, let me ask you this, and we appreciate you hanging out with us tonight. Our callers on BAMS, we just make them host of the show and keep them on with us. I said earlier to Kerry, and he agreed with me, I think Alabama will have the best skill players in the nation going into next season when you talk about Christian Jones, Amari Cooper, DeAndre White at wide receiver, then O.J. Howard at tight end, and you look at Derrick Henry and T.J. Yeldon in the backfield. Would you agree with that statement, or you think there's another team out there that can compete with Alabama when it comes to skill players?
Legend, there is no question Alabama is going to have the best skill players next season. And you just mentioned all of them, but the one that I'm high on for next season, look out for DeAndre White. I'm telling you, the guy, he's not the biggest guy in the world, 6 feet, 190 pounds. When you talk about physicality to be able to create separation at the line of scrimmage from defensive backs, his leaping ability, he's a smooth, crisp route runner. He's got great speed, great hands. As a freshman, DeAndre White was the deep ball threat for Alabama. And his year was supposed to be 2012, but unfortunately his campaign got cut short due to the ACL injury he suffered against Ole Miss, which made way for Amari Cooper to just completely take over. But this past season, DeAndre White came back strong. I think he had 35 receptions for 534 yards and 4 touchdowns. He really came back strong and was critical in the Kentucky game where it was wet and rainy in Lexington. DeAndre White had 4 receptions for 80 yards. I think he had 4 receptions for 45 yards against Georgia State, including a one-handed grab in the air in the back of the end zone. That was frustrating for a couple of weeks there. He came to life against, of course, Oklahoma in the Sugar Bowl, 3 receptions for 139 yards, a touchdown. But the thing that impresses me about DeAndre White is he and Kevin Norwood similar a bit. They're similar in the fact that nobody really talks about them, but when it comes down to making the receptions, they make the plays happen. And I think that Kevin Norwood's mantle of being a clutch guy is going to fall on DeAndre White because of the fact that White shows not to pursue the NFL draft, but to come back for his senior season. Now, Amari Cooper's going to have a phenomenal year. With Christian Jones, you don't know how to play him. You don't know how to play him to play against him because he can beat you if you play him back there as a running back. He's a burner as a receiver. Let's not forget, he's a magician on special teams. You look at O.J. Howard, who put the gas on LSU last year to what was supposed to be a 10-yard slant route and made it a 52-yard touchdown reception. I mean, Alabama had incredible talent. And you mentioned Derrick Henry, who's going to give T.J. Yeldon a run for his money next season. I'm just waiting on spring practice and to see, you know, which guy wants it more.
I like it. I'm about to get fired up.
You know what? It's March. It's early, Stephen. You're drinking Kool-Aid. You know, you're down there. You're mixing flavors together. You got orange and cherry. You're drunk on Kool-Aid wine right now.
I love it. He's breaking it.
No, the thing is that it doesn't take a genius to look at the talent that they've got on hand and the talent that's coming on board. And it's not to denigrate anything Stephen has said, because he's absolutely 100% bang on. But it's, I hope what doesn't happen is we sit around and jerk each other off until season starts, and the teams doing the same thing. You know, I mean, I felt a little bit of that last year because it seemed like they kind of bought into the hype of the what national media said and the lofty rankings in the polls, and I just thought, God, I'd rather be number 5 all year long than number 1 any day of the week. Let me work into that.
Not all year, because they ain't picking before this year, Holmes.
No, that's true. Well, it's right. Let me be number 4 then. not number five.
All right, if Florida State's the one and we get to play them in New Orleans, I can live with that.
I can live with that. But, I mean, it's a little bit of a fear factor I've got. But I think that the good news is we've got enough talent coming in that there's going to be a lot of competition for jobs. And I don't think that's going to end on day one for game one. I think that competition is healthy and it's there the entire year.
I agree with you, brother. I agree with you. Kerry, what do you think about this defense?
Well, I think this
I think if the cornerbacks come through, they'll be fine, Legend. I don't have any questions anywhere but corner.
But don't we do have experience at corner, Kerry.
Moderate.
Okay.
I mean, you don't have anybody that started an entire season there, Bird.
Well,
you got some guys that started games here and there, but not an entire season.
Yeah, okay, I give you that. I'm not
got a man that came off his man in the Auburn game and we beat him.
Well,
and I'm hoping he goes to offense. But the guy that I'm looking at corner this spring is Tony Brown, a true freshman. I realize that Barry Smith and some of the other guys are going to get a lot of the playing time early, but Tony Brown is the guy to watch. This spring, I think he can come in there and win a job.
At starter?
Yeah, I think he can.
On defense?
Yes, at corner.
Man, I'll tell you what, you heard it right here from CC Bama. He's on top of it, and he's got good opinions, so you write it down. Speaking of writing it down, we've got a caller on hold. Steven, hang with us. We're going to put our 256 on. 256, you're on BAMS. What do you have for us tonight?
Artie.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Marty.
Marty.
What up, Home Skillet?
Hey, Legend. Good to hear you. Hey, Steven. Hey, you bring a good product to the show, man. You got a good opinion. I really like what you got to say. Man, you've done a good job. Hey, quick things. I want to know if Bird, Rock Thomas, and Legend has took a trip out to Colorado to get some of that wacky weed, and y'all been smoking it on the way back, because y'all are thinking this Alabama basketball team is turning around in one game. I mean, good grief. You know, have you not been watching this team all year?
Yes.
They show promise one game, and the next game they come out and stink.
Yeah,
I mean, I just don't see it. I don't see it.
That's kind of what Kerry said, Marty. He made a little bit of the same less impassioned commentary that, you know, perhaps because it was senior day, Relly's last game, et cetera, these guys were going to come out and light it up, which they did. Now, the question is, can they sustain that type of intensity into the next game against LSU? Since it's not at home, and not at home for either team, I look at that as a benefit to Alabama. Why? I don't know. I just pulled that out of my ass, to be honest with you. But
how many games has Alabama won away from home? How many?
Not many. But again, that's it. Now, wait a minute. Listen to
zero.
You guys. You're right. Okay, they've won zero, but that's in a hostile atmosphere. They're playing in a quasi non-hostile atmosphere over at the Atlanta Dome. You know, both teams at LSU and Alabama will have their 300 people, you know, wearing orange or not orange, yellow and gold and purple and gold. It's not a road game. No, this is playing in a tournament on a site that really doesn't have a home team favorite, because I don't even think they know that Georgia plays basketball over there.
They don't admit it. All I said was they had a chance to beat LSU. I didn't beat Kentucky the next day. I think they'll go 1-1 and come on home.
Hey, guys, I hope y'all are really right. I hope y'all are right. I do, because I bleed crimson and white. I want Alabama basketball to succeed. I want Anthony Grant to succeed. Believe me, I do. But
I think he will.
You know, it's irrelevant. We're not doing anything in basketball this year. We're not winning the SEC tournament. That's just a fantasy. I mean, you know, you can dream it all you want to, but, you know, the only thing that matters right now in Alabama is football. You know, and I want to push back basketball just a little while. You know, I've heard y'all guys talking about, you know, this upcoming season. I've heard y'all talk about the offense. And I'm really not worried about the offense. I believe I could play quarterback with this offensive team that Alabama can put on the field next year, I believe I could play quarterback and be successful in this game. I want to look and concentrate on the defensive side of the ball. What I'm really excited about is the linebacker core. You know, I know we lost probably a first round C.J. Mosley, but I'm really excited about Dupree lining up on that. I believe he's going to be the leader. I believe Reuben Foster is going to come on. I think the pace of the game caught him off guard last year. I think a year in the system, he's going to be ready to go. You know, Reggie Ragland, Ryan Anderson. I think this is going to be a really exciting year to watch this linebacker core. What do y'all guys think?
I like it. I'm really interested in Reggie Ragland, see where he shows up. And then the kid out of Auburn last year.
Foster.
I'd really like to see Ragland and Foster take that next step up this year. And I'm excited about Trey DePriest. I think he kind of steps in as the leader in C.J. Mosley's spot. So, and Chris Anderson. And still you got Xavier Dixon down there, too. So,
well, you know who you didn't mention?
Who did I leave out?
You didn't mention one of Kirby Smart's favorite players.
Yep.
And I think he's going to be Sam linebacker.
Yep.
Dylan Lee.
I was going to say, you guys are just you've done the Betty Crocker spread on this cake.
You watch when they play West Virginia, who's the Sam linebacker?
It's going to be Dylan Lee.
I'm telling you.
Oh, I like
Dylan. And you know, and Ledge, I'm going to tell you a secret about Dylan Lee. It may not be a secret, but I think Kerry shares in this sentiment with me. The kid has a special attitude. He's got a linebacker's attitude. He's got a Dick Butkus, L.C. Greenwood. I mean, he is an old-school linebacker with the tools, the physical size, and the talent to go with the attitude. Now, Vinny Sunseri, I think, even though he wasn't a linebacker, had the great attitude. He just didn't have the physical tools. Vinny Sunseri, I think it's going to be it's tough for him to make the pros, especially at the position that he played in college. But Dylan Lee, this is where Kerry and I are going to do the little, you know, brother wiggle together out there in the middle of midfield. I'm telling you, man, this kid is the package, and it's not just the physical package. It's a mental package, and then it's an attitude on top of it. Just mean. Just side of being dirty.
What you need to be a good Sam linebacker at Alabama is you need to be Corey Reamer with a little bit more speed, and that's what Dylan
Lee is. That's what Dylan Lee is, yeah.
A little bigger, a little faster, but the mentality, the smartness, the awareness, the savvy of Corey Reamer. That's Dylan Lee. Watch when they play West Virginia.
And then the ability to cut somebody in half and enjoy it.
Oh, he'll knock your dick in the dirt without question.
Yeah, and enjoy it and stand over you and say, what are you looking
for? He'll help you up and pat you on the butt.
Oh, yeah, here time. It is. Let me hand it back to you.
I'm going
to
be here all day. Come see me.
Yeah, come see me again.
Was he a junior this year?
He will be a junior. That's correct.
To be junior.
He's kind of did his time behind some of the great linebackers of the last few years. There's so much talent down there. I mean, it's really amazing when you look at this team, just how much talent and how many young players. It's amazing the young players, the highly talented young players that's yet to step up, the Dylan Lees, the Fosters, who might explode on the scene at any moment. How about the defensive line? I know we can kind of count on Mr. Robinson taking his attitude back up next year, but that seems to be a concern to some of the experts. Should it be?
I'm not concerned about it.
Look at these rings, baby. You know what has these rings.
I'm going
to tell
you,
now listen to me. Listen to the bird, boys. You know who wears rings on every finger? A playa. And that's what they've got. They've got seven players down there. These are guys that can wear a ring on every finger and not look stupid doing it. Or you wouldn't have the balls to walk up and say, you're not a player. You can't wear those rings. Guys, they've got seven kids that can rotate on that line. And I'm telling you, they can play with finger down or standing up, either one. And they can go either way.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
I got a question for all y'all. You know, we've been real big on the 3-4 defense. Do you not think Saban changes that this year and starts running a lot more 4-3?
You'll see a composite.
That's the thing, Marty. Every time the Jack walks up to the line of scrimmage, we're in a 4-3.
Yeah, but you got the Jack thing. I believe he's going to be a player.
I think it's a semantic argument. Because they can call it a 3-4, but the minute that linebacker comes up or the Jack comes up, you've got
Jack walks up, it becomes a 4-3. And what I was going to say earlier about the defensive line is, Bird, your boy Ivory, I think he's going to get beat out at nose guard.
Oh, my heavens.
I think Jerron Reed, the junior college transfer, is going to beat him out by August.
Who are the seven players that you was referring to, Bird?
All the guys that play defense on the line.
Oh, okay.
He don't have them memorized like I do.
No, let Kerry tell you.
Kerry, who?
I'm not sure it's only seven, but here's the ones I'll say they'll get a letter this fall, okay?
I'm going to say a lot of yeses now.
Okay, I'm going to say Jerron Reed, the junior college transfer.
Yes.
I'm going to say Brandon Ivory, the returning starter nose guard.
Who knows what he's doing.
I'm going to say Darren Lake, who may even be the number three nose guard this fall. I'm going to say the starting ends will be A'shaun Robinson and Jonathan Allen.
Copeland and Curry.
However, some people say DJ Petway is going to play in and not Jack linebacker. That's going to be one thing to watch when they start practicing.
Maybe.
Where does DJ Petway line up? Then that's six right there. Oh, we didn't even mention Dalvin Tomlinson and Corin Curvin. Hell, if DJ Petway plays in and not Jack, they got eight.
Yeah.
He plays Jack, they got seven, like Bird said. We don't know exactly where DJ is going to line up. Drew was telling us that Denzel Duvall is going to be the starting Jack when they walk out there Saturday, and he probably will be. But there's talk of trying, and then, there's always been some talk the last 2 years of maybe moving Xavier Dixon to defensive end so he can get some more playing time instead of letting him be the backup Jack. So, is Petway going to play Jack linebacker or defensive end? I've heard both. When he was discussing the situation, Saban said it was going to be an end to some boosters, but I wasn't there, so I can't verify that. So we'll see where Petway lines up. He was an end before, but he's dropped about 15, 20 pounds while he was in junior college, so he may be a Jack. And if he's a Jack, he might beat out Duvall. So it's interesting. There's so much talent, but they got at least seven or eight that's going to play on the D-line. I agree with Bird.
Yep.
That's a lot.
I might have missed somebody. I didn't even mention Dakota Ball. He stayed hurt all last year. I don't know what his situation is going
to be. If he's healthy and can play, again, you've got a force that's to be reckoned with simply because of his sheer body type and size.
Nobody should have to play long.
No. At the end of the season, guys, this ought to be a defense that does not look worn out and ground down.
They've just got to figure out the cornerback situation. I can tell you who's going to be the rest of the positions, but the corners are up in the air.
Well, I think you'd have to consider Eddie Jackson as definitely one of them.
I think he's one of them, but who's the other one? I mean, I think the other one's going to be Tony Brown, but some people say Maurice Smith. And then you never hear much about Anthony Averett and Jonathan Cook that redshirted, but I'm told they did real well on the scout team. There's going to be a lot of – and then this fall, Marlon gets there. Marlon Hunt.
Right.
So, there's going to be a ton of competition at corner to the point that when it's all said and done, there might be one or two corners end up at safety.
Yep.
I like it. Let's Marty jump in. Let's get a comment. Let's get a comment from Steven too. Give y'all a chance to dive in.
I think Maurice Smith's going to have a real good chance at corner this year. I've heard a lot that he's got a good attitude. I've heard he's worked really hard. And he's got a leg up on Tony Brown. Even though Tony Brown's come in January, I think Smith's got a good chance to really show out. If he don't, then he's going to get passed.
That's a good point. I hope he's a little better on his tackling this year, but he definitely has got physical.
Steven, jump in. Give us your word on it.
I think the best corner, the best fit for quarterback is going to be Geno Smith. Keep in mind, Geno's second year at the University of Alabama. He soaked in what's required of him from Coach Saban and defensive coordinator Kirby Smart. I think it's Geno's time. Geno's going to step in. Play a major role. Geno, Eddie Jackson, who showed me a lot last season, especially in the game against Ole Miss. We made the interception in that ball game. When we talk about Tony Brown, I think he may be the one corner that's going to come in and get early playing time because not only is he a five-star guy, but guy has great intangibles. He has great ball instincts. He can break on the ball. He can high point the football in the air. He has the ability to play his left heel in the ground, break on the football, make a crushing hit all the season, I just like his instincts take the game. Marlon Humphrey is going to be an amazing corner. Even Lawrence Hootie Jones reminds me of Mark Barron and his ability to wrap up, make hits, and judge where the ball is going. But as far as the best corner right now, I got to get to Geno Smith.
Steven, they moved Geno to safety.
Yeah, I was going to say, what will happen is because of Geno's knowledge of what's going on in the backfield, guys, they're going to move him to safety.
They've already moved him. He's a nickel and a safety. He's
yep.
no longer working.
And he's going to be on the field.
He's playing, but he's
yeah.
not playing.
And that's an attribute to what he's done. He's played well in the past, but it's going to be a little bit of a different gig for Geno as they're getting the corners ramped up. We've got another caller on hold before we go to break. It's our good friend Payne. I'm going to put him on. We've got a very lively roundtable this evening on BAMS. Payne, how are you? What's going on up in your part of the world?
It's going great up here, guys. How's it going down in your all's world?
We're all over the state, man.
Payne, I'm happy, Payne, because the softball team is winning.
Payne's pretty happy, too. He's got a girlfriend on the
team. Yeah, Payne.
Hey, Hayes.
Payne.
I don't have no girlfriend on that team.
Stepping out on this one, are
y'all
you, Payne?
Don't give me in trouble now.
Stepping out on Jocelyn with the Nate Hayes.
Oh!
I know where he got the name at now.
I've got Jocelyn's phone number, too. You're
maybe
in trouble. Y'all going to get me in trouble.
Y'all
going to get me in trouble with the name either.
Hey,
he's a friend of mine.
When you call from now, we're going to say, Nay Nay, you're on live with Bounce.
Y'all going to get me in so much trouble.
No, we're not, because Joshua knows you better than we do, so she knows not to believe us.
What you got for us tonight, Frank?
But, hey, I got a couple of questions. Okay, my first question is, this year's quarterback, who do y'all think it's going to be? I think it's going to be either Jay Coker or David Cornwell.
It's going to be Coker.
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 Yeah, you got
the
round table.
Well, That set that straight. All right, second question. I was listening to the Paul Feinbaum show today.
Uh-oh.
And boy, were they, pardon my French, pissing me off today.
What did they say?
Okay. Especially the way they was saying the way AJ is playing with a chip on his shoulder and all of this mess right here and I heard that he was this year or last year playing with a chip on his shoulder because he was hollering at his offensive line, getting on to him. And while Barrett Jones was there, Barrett Jones wouldn't let him do that. So some of the offensive line players came out and said he does have a chip on his shoulder. And now everybody is saying he's playing with a chip on his shoulder. So he can't throw the deep ball. He doesn't have that arm. And that he's going to be low in the draft. Me personally, I seen him throw the ball, 50, maybe 60 yards? And I said to myself, what does these people want him to do? Throw 90-yard bombs? I don't get it. What are these people talking about?
Okay, I'm going to jump in as a bird. First, he has to have a chip on his shoulder, or otherwise he wouldn't be a winning quarterback. The last thing I want is some milquetoast Mary running my damn football team. I want a guy with a big sack of balls hanging between his legs. No, I'm serious. I mean, the last thing you want is someone, you know, gosh, I feel bad for you because you can get enough playing time. It's like, screw you, buddy. Get your butt off the ground, work harder, and earn your way on this team. So, you know, there may be something to that. I've always thought AJ had a little bit of an attitude, a little bit of chip. You know, you bring me rings, I don't care. And if he did, so what? That's what you want back there. You want a guy that's got an edge. As far as his ability to throw the long ball, I think they did the combine today. I think that he blasted them out of the stadium. He had a good day. Kerry, is that correct? Because what I heard today is that he did a good job.
Yes, he did a good job in Indianapolis as well.
As
far as him being a draft pick, he's not going to go before the third or fourth round, but he will be drafted.
I think he may go a little higher, Kerry. I'm thinking second round.
He might be second round.
I really do. I really do. I kind of see AJ as a Eli Manning, a light version of Eli Manning. He really favors Eli in the pocket to me. And,
he's better than Eli.
Well, I mean,
better at this point in his career, gentlemen. A.J. McCarron has won two national championships and played in games that Eli wouldn't have dreamed of playing for Ole Miss up here in Oxford, Mississippi. That still looks like a big high school football stadium.
You time their fastball, Eli will beat him by 10 miles an hour.
I think A.J.'s got he don't have as bad his arm. I really thought he threw the ball well on his pro day and at the combine. I thought he threw the ball pretty well.
He did, but he ain't no Eli.
Well, I agree with you, but, I mean, he's kind of Eli light to me. I mean,
he might be Matt Ryan.
Matt Liner?
Matt Ryan.
That's his ceiling.
I don't know about that one now. Matt Ryan's a pretty good quarterback.
Guys, I'll tell you what.
But y'all were just telling me how great AJ was. I'm a Falcon fan.
I don't know if he's that great now. Some people were comparing
him to Flacco. And when I brought up the Flacco comparison recently, they said that Flacco threw it a lot harder than AJ. But AJ answered a lot of questions on the deep ball. He'll get drafted probably around the third round, maybe the fourth.
Yeah.
But unless he gets with the right team, he's not going to be a starter.
Well, it's going to be several years down the line for AJ.
For sure.
But he'll be
getting paid, though.
I can see him holding that level for 3 or 4 years and maybe stepping in and
right.
He's going to look good as a team spokesman for somebody, you know.
Yeah, when we start talking about that chip, he sure will.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll give AJ his kudos because he deserves it because he's been a great quarterback at Alabama, but I still got a bad taste in my mouth for him pulling for Auburn and making it so publicly known how he was pulling for Auburn. That still just leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Pulling for Auburn and didn't play him a senior ball. What I think he was in my mind after that.
I agree with him that Auburn game.
I'll give a damn how many rings he got.
Auburn didn't play that well either. We had Auburn beat up until that rollout that
illegal
Nick
play.
Marshall, yeah, he stepped across the line of scrimmage, which that should have never counted. We should have won that game, but. We
sure
had that game won. You're right. Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Shoulda, woulda. Guys, it's over. It's done. They beat us.
There's still 1 second.
Payne, let me. I'll tell you what, at AJ, let me give you the biggest hug that I've ever given any human being. Let's see if I can get that butt hurt feeling you've got over that iron bowl.
Hey, I'm not hurt over the iron bowl, and I'm not hurt over the sugar bowl. I'll take a 11-2 season any day of the year.
That's my man.
There we go. Bring
the
plane.
Do that any day of the year. But you're right.
Yeah, but one of the
Bert,
two can't be Auburn. Though.
I want a quarterback that would jump down that offensive line that ain't doing their jobs. if they ain't doing their jobs or want to do their jobs just because AJ's got a chip on his shoulder, they can sit their asses on the bench.
Well, I agree with you.
And let
there.
Somebody else play.
That's why we're having a whole retooling of the entire guts of the coaching staff of the Alabama football team. And it starts from the top down. Well, listen, go ahead, Marty.
You know, as bad as those two losses was at the end of the year, the only good thing I can bring out of it would be that maybe it will put some hunger back in these players and some humbleness back in these guys that know that they have to work hard, they have to finish hard to win championships. And that's the only good thing I think that will come out of these last two losses.
I like it.
It worked in 2010, but I just don't know why it should have to take that every 3 years.
Bird, what was you going to say?
No, I'm going to take us to break here in a minute and bring, I think, Drew DeArmond's on with us.
Cool.
All right.
So this
I
has been a
go, guys.
All right, bro.
Roll
thanks
tide,
for the call,
Payne.
Roll tide, Payne.
Roll tide.
Bye.
Well, what a fun show. We've had Stephen Smith on with Marty and Payne at the same time, and that's a hoot and a half. Guys, sit tight. We're going to be right back. You're listening to BAMS Radio, and we're going into our third hour. I believe we've got our good friend Drew DeArmond, who is without a doubt probably one of the best recruiting minds in the state. And we will be right back.
BAMS Radio. We're not your average sports talk show. All Bama, all the time. Bringing the lumber for Alabama sports.
The roof, the roof. The roof is on fire. The roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. The roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. We don't need no water. Let the mother burn. Burn, mother burn.
Just moving on down the road with BAMS.
Great show. I enjoy it.
And we're losing the legend. Drew DeArmond, you're coming on live with us.
Hey. Gentlemen,
are
you
there
how
with
you guys
us?
This evening?
Yes, doing great.
And I got to interject in this discussion. And I Bird, you'll probably get a little frustrated with me, but I'm a Bama guy through and through, but I'm a Manning admirer, and Eli Manning's a really good quarterback. People forget he had Ole Miss. They lost a very close game to LSU this senior year. They would have been the SEC championship game, and they'll never sniff it again. Trust me. The guy's a great player. He's got two Super Bowl rings. He didn't have a good year this past year, but the team around him didn't play very well, and I think he'll bounce back. But I do agree. I think AJ compares favorably with him and Tom Brady from a skill set, you know, foundation. And I think he's being undervalued by some of the NFL guys. I think he'll go in about the third round, and I'll give you a tidbit. I was told by our guy that was on the team today at Pro Day, Sean Payton watched every throw he made. And I think, you know, if you look at the Saints, Drew Brees is probably got 3 to 4 years left in the tank, but eventually he's going to have to retire. They don't have a quarterback in the future. I would watch the Saints. I know Kerry's probably, you know, puking right now, but I would watch the Saints with A.J. McCarron.
I'd be fine with him going to the Saints.
Me too.
I'm sick of A.J., and that would give me more reason to pull against him. I'm good with that.
Well, I do think he has an attitude at times, but I think he's a great player at Alabama. I think he played the best when the games were the biggest, and I think that's a big thing to, as a QB to have. And he protected the football. You know, we didn't end the season the way we wanted to, but, you know, I still felt like he played at a very high level this year. And, you know, some of the stuff after the season, you know, you kind of wanted to just be quiet and play football, but he's got a bright future ahead of him. If he goes to the right organization, if he ends up with an organization like Brody Croyle went to, he'd be in trouble. But if he goes to the right organization with the right head coach, he can have a good run.
Does anybody want to talk recruiting?
I'm
well, you know, I will tell you this, guys. I just talked to the best player in the state of Alabama tonight. And I talked to Deron Payne for about 15 minutes. Got an update from him. And he's a guy that is going to be massively recruited. I think he gave me his top group. His top four is Alabama, Auburn, Florida State, and Texas in that order. He says he doesn't have a favorite right now. But he gave me those four in order, and I think from talking to him and just hearing the way he talks about the schools, I still think Alabama's in very good shape. He's bench pressing 450 pounds right now and hang cleaning, power cleaning over 350. He's a monster, and he's a guy. He has a really close relationship with Mario Cristobal, but he's coming. He's planning on coming back to Alabama soon with his team for team camp, and I just would look for the full court press to continue to be put on Deron Payne for obvious reasons.
You know, Drew, I got a chance to watch him play last year against Hewitt Trustful, and, you know, we made a lot of jokes over the last couple of years about the suplex move that Fanning had against Missouri. But in the game against Hewitt Trustful, Deron picked up a running back and kind of walked him over to the sidelines and just laid him down gently. It wasn't a real suplex, but it was a massive demonstration of brute strength. I don't know if you've seen any of that film, but he's a very, very strong young man.
Yeah, he just needs to get better, a little bit better with his technique, get a little bit more consistent. But he's a guy that has a huge upside. Like you said before, you know, he told me tonight, he really likes playing the three technique in Alabama's scheme. He thinks he can play the nose as well, but he likes to play in. And he's a guy, you know, in the future, if in Alabama's strength and conditioning program with the coaching of Bo Davis and the player development of Nick Saban and his staff, you could see him just becoming a monster, an every down monster. I know I've heard from good sources that his defensive line coach, Dennis Alexander, former Alabama offensive lineman, is paying on him all the time about technique and trying to, you know, get him to play hard every down. If you do that with Deron Payne, the sky's the limit. He can be an All-American, and he'll probably be, I'd say, a top 10 recruit nationally and maybe the number one defensive lineman in the country when it's all said and done.
Do you foresee an Alabama offer for his teammate, Mixon?
He's moved up the charts, Terry. He's ahead of Javante Samuel of the Central Phoenix City as a slot guy. They like him. I don't think they think right now it's a package deal situation. I talked to Mixon about 3 weeks ago. He likes Clemson and Auburn pretty much are his two favorites. He does have Alabama in his top three. But as of right now, they like Mixon, but I don't know how big a priority. It could be the camp season is going to be interesting this summer to see how big a priority he ends up being. I think they're going to try to take a slot guy. I like Mixon's film a lot. I think he's an electric kid. If he has a big summer, I could see Alabama trying to make a big-time push for him. And, of course, there's a lot of Bama people around the program with Dennis Alexander and then the head coach, Phil Smith, who was a punter at Alabama in the late 80s.
He was, 1989. Why don't you talk about, since there's been so many of them, maybe pick out a couple of the more recent offers that have gone out and talk about those, Drew, and I mean Alabama offers.
Right. You know, it's going to be interesting. The quarterback situation is really going to be interesting because the top two guys, while I'm looking at the park, were Jarrett Stidham and, of course, Ricky Town. And if Ricky Town had stayed committed, that would have been a done situation. But, you know, Ricky Town's gone to Southern Cal. I don't think, you know, he's done with the recruiting process. Ben Stidham commits to Texas Tech, and a lot of people thought Texas Tech, you know, was where he really wanted to go. He's shown a lot of interest in their program and their style of offense fit his skill set. Now, you know, they've got another offer out to a California quarterback who threw for 5,700 yards. I mean, this is a kid that he's really been leaning to West Coast schools, but that was before Alabama offered him, and that's what I'm going to be interested in seeing. Because I saw an interview with him, and he was talking about, you know, that'd be some trip that he was talking about making, and he wasn't really talking about coming down south. But now, you know, that he's been offered, I mean, Jake Browning, I mean, you throw the numbers he's thrown for. It's obviously a Lane Kiffin situation. Lane Kiffin's evaluated and really likes him a lot as a player. The quarterback situation is going to be interesting for Alabama to see who they get to show up to throw for the coaches, because I don't think there's any way that Alabama's going to take somebody besides Christy Town this early without him coming and throwing for the staff, and that would have meant Jarrett Stidham as well.
Bert, any questions from the chat room right now?
You know what? I'm actually not in chat tonight, Kerry. I didn't start with the board in my feet, and let me see if the chat's even open.
Well, I'll keep asking questions, I guess, if you don't mind.
It's we still have got two callers live, so.
And one of them's got a cell phone that Walmart would be ashamed of. I don't know who, but it sounds like they're underwater.
who it is.
It may be Drew.
Drop off, we'll know. Drew,
no,
Drew,
no,
Drew,
no, Drew got
what I was talking
five,
about was going on before Drew came on.
Oh, that was, I probably think it was Steven.
Well, and guys, the other QB that, you know, that I've watched film of that's interesting to me is Zach Gentry from Albuquerque, New Mexico. He's a bigger kid. He's 6'6", with really good mobility. It's another kid out on the West Coast, though. It's going to be interesting to see how serious Alabama gets about him. I know he's Oklahoma State, the school, though, that he really likes. He hasn't visited Alabama either. But, you know, the quarterback situation, I think they'll take one. But, you know, I was in Georgia this weekend at a 7-on-7 tournament talking to someone that has deep connections in the state of Georgia. We both agreed that we thought, you know, Parker McLeod would likely move on after that, after the spring. And then, obviously, and I, we were even talking about, we talked about on this show, Cooper Bateman, if he doesn't make a big push, or Morris. So it's going to be interesting to see, because I think Alabama, they've definitely got to identify QB. I think they will. And I'm just anxious to see, you know, this spring, how Blake Sims does under the tutelage of Lane Kiffin. And also, Morris, because this is really his, if he doesn't step forward now, he's really going to be in bad shape. He's not going to, you know, I wouldn't expect him to stay. And then, of course, Cornwell, who I think has the biggest upside of anybody they have right now, because, but everybody's in a waiting pattern because of Jacob Coker, obviously.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. We were speculating earlier on who might be the starters at A-Day, and I said Blake Sims versus either Cooper Bateman or Alec Morris, but my favorite right now would be Bateman.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about that. I don't think there's any doubt that that would probably be the case. And, you know, that, and it's been interesting because Lance Thompson's done a lot of damage in the state of Virginia in the last couple of years, and they've offered two more guys, Giovanni Simmons. I watched some film of him this week. Linebacker from Virginia Beach, Ocean Lakes, Virginia. I thought his film was pretty good. And then Ricky DeBerry, I watched him. He's a really good passer. He's more, to me, he's more of a Jack linebacker type, but I really thought he flashed on tape as well. It's going to be interesting to see who has the priority in the class this year, because there's a ton of offers going out. But as you know, there's only a few of them that are committable right off. So the camp situation is going to be something to really monitor. There's going to be a lot of competition. And I think Alabama, they've already got, you know, a decent start on the class, but I think they're going to start being selective as far as who they take. And then you've got guys like Kerryon Johnson, who announced this week he was going to be coming for the March 15th practice, and everybody knew that was going to happen because he and his father want to meet with Lane Kiffin. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of push, you know, they can make with Kerryon, because everybody knows Florida State's in there hard with him as well.
Is he definitely a college running back, or could he – would he consider safety at Alabama?
That was going to be my question. Does that guy, I mean, it looks like he's got the athletic skill, Drew, to be able to be shifted into a defensive position fairly easily.
Bird, there's no doubt. I had this conversation with him about a month ago. I told him, you know, after I had seen him come back from the shoulder injury before he broke his hand and he was playing basketball, and the plays he makes off the ball in basketball, I told him to carry on. I said, I've heard that you may be giving some thought to playing safety. He plays both ways in high school. He's more a situational guy defensively when they have to, depending on who they're playing as far as the level of competition. But he makes freak plays, guys. I've watched him in the Super Six, you know, 3 years in a row, making one-handed interceptions. I've seen him do it live in the plays he makes off the ball. I told him, and I told other people this, and I mean it, and it's a bold statement, but Kerryon Johnson could be the next Ed Reed. He has those kind of instincts, those kind of ball skills. Now, he's a great running back, and, you know, Lane Kiffin's talking to him about a Reggie Bush-type role at running back, but I'm going to tell you something, guys. He broke his hand this year in basketball, and he's had both his labrums rebuilt as far as shoulders. I'm not sure from a viability of a long-term standpoint that he would be I know that Alabama would rotate backs, and a lot of times they do that on a college and pro level, and you're not carrying the ball 20 times a game. But it's still a lot of wear and tear. Yes, you have to hit it safety, but a lot of times in between, it's not as physical a contact spot every play as linebacker. And I just think – or excuse me, as running back. And the thing is, I just think Kerryon Johnson's long-term for a pro career – with Nick Saban coaching him and Kirby Smart would be safety. I've talked to, you know, many respected people around their program and a very respected college basketball coach. He is a big Alabama fan, the football-wise, and he told me, you know, for Kerryon Johnson to reach his dream, he needs to be a safety. And I agree with that. We think he could play 10, 11, 12 years as a safety, whereas, you know, as y'all know, the shelf life for a running back is only, you know, 3 to 5 years. So as a safety, he could definitely play a long time in the NFL because he's not afraid to hit. But if the thing that sets him apart is range and ball skill. I mean, he's just got tremendous talent. He's one of the best, you know, young players I've ever seen around here, and it's going to be a dogfight. His top three has not changed for months. You know, Jeremy Pruitt was in really good with it at FSU, went to Georgia, tried to offer him the other day and did offer him, but he's not going to – they're really not under consideration. It's going to be, you know, Alabama, Florida State, or Auburn. That's going to be the final three to the end. And it also helps him. He's got a lot of people around him helping him with phone calls and the constant media attention, not driving him crazy. So he's just a great kid, a great young man, and his dad's a first-class person. And he comes from a basketball family. His brother, Karan, his older brother, was a great point guard at Belmont University, now plays overseas, and that's one of the reasons Alabama's basketball program is where it's at, because he should have been at Alabama. But he was Mr. Basketball and a two-time state tournament most valuable player. And then his sister plays basketball at Faulkner University. So they're just a great family, some of the best people I've ever met. And wherever he goes, Trayon will be successful because of the head he's got on his shoulders.
What about his teammate Malik Miller? Is he leaning anywhere early?
There's not a prohibitive favorite, but if he had to, it'd be Alabama. His mother's a very big Alabama fan. His family are Alabama fans. He was very excited about the offer from Nick Saban. And the thing about Malik, Terry, the last 5 weeks, and you'll see him against Broadway this year, but the last 5 weeks of the playoff last year when Kerryon Johnson was hurt with the shoulder and had an ankle issue and wasn't 100% was basically a lot of times a decoy offensively. Malik Miller took it to the next level. And then in the semifinals against Sac, he was unreal. I think he had 26 carries for about 323 yards and two TDs and was just he carry him on his backside. He rushed for well over, I think, 1,400 yards last year. And honestly, he didn't get as many touches early in the year because Kerryon was healthy. But he's a sledgehammer type. He reminds me a lot of Jalston Fowler. He can be versatile. I think he could be a guy that can also play some H-back. He plays linebacker defensively, but for Nick Saban's scheme, he's going to be a little bit undersized because Malik is 5'11". But right now, he's around the 230-pound range. He's a one-cut physical runner that Nick Saban likes. And for them to offer him this early and for the improvement that he made from week 10 to week 15, he's definitely a comer, and he's somebody that Alabama is going to be all over. He's academically a very good kid, too. He's already got an offer by Vanderbilt. So with the kids at Madison Academy, the one thing that's going to be really good with those guys is academically, there's no worry.
And then we learned this week of a 17 kid that got a Florida State offer from Madison Academy. My gosh.
Well, no. I want to correct something there, Terry. That kid is at Bob Jones.
Is he okay? Not bad. Madison,
yeah,
Alabama,
no,
not Madison Academy.
Yeah, in the same town, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, he's in the same town, AJ Harris, and he's a kid that I saw once last year, and he's a quick kid. And you can see he had a lot of talent, especially for a ninth grader. I was a little bit surprised that Southern Terry offered him so quickly in the process. I mean, offered him verbally, but they felt like they had to get in on him that quick. Right now, he's going into out-of-state schools like FSU, Tennessee, and LSU. But as you know, in 3 years, you know, a lot can happen. So. That I would say he's somebody that'll definitely be on the watch list so far. He's
a kid that is around 6 feet tall, has I think 5 or 6 interceptions last year. He ended up starting because they had another young man that went down with an injury, a season-ending injury, and they had to promote him up, and he just played at a very high level, and he kind of made a name for himself quickly.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about this 7-on-7 team that you've begun to associate with and watch practice, Drew? I think people might want to hear about that.
Oh, absolutely. It's the Southern Express, coached by Byron DeVinter. He's had a lot of guys in his program. He's had Bo Scarborough. He's got Rico McGraw now, Maurice Smitherman. He's had a lot of really good, talented athletes that have run through his program over the years. I got to see them in Georgia, in Sandy Springs, Georgia this week. And it was interesting to see. It was my first 7-on-7 tournament in a couple of years that I've been able to see, and I got to see it up close and got to talk and it was fun touching base with all the coaches from the Marietta, Georgia area, Louisville, Kentucky, and I was able to discover a young freshman receiver, guys, Justin Marshall from Salem High School in Georgia. And He's a guy already 6'2", about 180 pounds. You need to be ready for that kid. We did the profile on him on my website. He was one of them getting it like Calvin Johnson. He gets a much older guy. So when the coaches introduced me to him and said he was a ninth grader, I was a little bit stunned. He's going to go to Alabama's camp this summer, and he's a guy that was already 6'2", with the advanced ball skills he's got. He's going to be a big-time recruit. And Byron DeVenter, he's got, you know, a guy that Alabama has not offered yet. I know they want him to get stronger and evaluate him in camp, but I'm telling you, Maurice Smithman can play all day. He was the best cover corner I saw there. I showed him to a coach that I befriended down there from he was just observing from Marietta Lassiter, Coach Marcus Singletary, and he just raved about the ball skills that Smitherman showed. When I told him he had 44 offers, he said, "Yeah, that's what I heard. I've been wanting to watch this kid. That's why I came down here." And he's a secondary coach at Lassiter and played at the University of Minnesota for Tim Brewster, and he was just amazed at the way he could almost jam a guy with one hand. And Maurice, he's got a size 13 cleat, guys. He's got huge hands. I think he's going to have a growth spurt, and if he does, I think Nick Saban would be all over him. He likes Alabama a lot. They're not in the top five because they don't have an offer. He's got a top five of Florida State, Florida, Clemson, Georgia, and LSU. But he's got offers from everybody in the country, and he's a freak. I mean, he hasn't had the best supporting cast in minor high school. But as y'all know, in minor high school has always put out some talented players, several to Nick Saban at LSU. We had Tyrone King on the 2009 Alabama National Championship team, Dee McClure at Florida State. So they've always had some talent. They just need direction. But Maurice Smitherman is as good as any of those guys. Christian Jones is now at Alabama. He's a Christian Jones type athlete, just a little bit shorter, but he's a guy that can really play. And another guy I really like a lot that I hope will be in Alabama signing class. He's not been offered yet, but he's 6'5", or 6'4 and a half, very close to 6'5", 230 pounds. St. James tight end, Jalen Harris, my first chance to see him on the hoof this past weekend. He's not a burner, but he's fluid, has very nice hands, and he's a guy you look at and you project down the line. Could be a 255-pound, 260-pound inline tight end, and those are rare this day and time.
You know what was so awesome about that spiel you just gave? You just named a player for about half the games I've got scheduled for Friday Night Lights this time.
Well, you know,
I mean, I'm going to see St. James. I'm going to see Minor. I'm going to see Kerryon Johnson and Madison when they come down here, Madison Academy. I mean, you just named somebody in about half my games this fall. So thanks a lot, bro. Friday Night Lights.
Well, no problem, bro. Always glad to do that. And I'll give you another tip on Jalen Harris. He's very, very intelligent, very, very well-spoken. He got his latest offers from the Cal Bears, and so, you know, he's a kid that I think Alabama is still evaluating. They want to see him in camp, but he's somebody I've watched film of, and I really like him a lot. I hope he ends up being a priority. He plays both ways for Jimmy Perry, who I know you're very familiar with at St. James, and he'll be going into his second year at that program. And he's a guy that, you know, he's very, very physical. He doesn't mind mixing it up. And I just think, you know, with his skill set in Alabama, I think Alabama needs to take at least two good tight ends in this class, and I'm hoping that Jalen Harris will be one of them.
I hope he gets an offer. And you know who else I hope gets an offer? 2016 quarterback Tyler Johnson out of Spanish Fort.
Absolutely. I know you're very high on him. And you know,
Let me interject real quick, Drew.
Go ahead, Bert.
The kid I've been kind of following has been Walker Lott over at Briarwood. Do you think he has any chance at all?
You know, I heard a little bit about him, Bert. I'm not as familiar with Walker Lott, but I think, you know, there's a chance that he could develop. I know Kerry has, you know, deep ties over there to what Briarwood. He would probably be better to.
I wrote about
him.
Walker twice this past year.
Yeah.
He's got some skill. He can run the ball.
He's a baby.
He's a lot like a young Cooper Bateman.
Yeah.
But he's going to be a junior. And
got two years of high school.
That's
left.
The same right. class that Tyler Johnson of Spanish Fort's in. Now, I think Walker, if he keeps getting better, could get some SEC offers, but I'm not going to go out on a limb and say he'll get an Alabama offer. But I think he could get maybe a Vandy or a State or an Ole Miss type offer if he keeps improving.
I know that Bama has been to visit him. I know for sure.
Well, I know, and I'll say this. I know that the name escapes me, but I believe they've had a kid – recently at Briarwood that went to Mississippi State that just finished his career that had a pretty good – either that or Vanderbilt.
It was Vanderbilt. Vandy.
Right.
Yeah, Vandy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I knew they had a kid that had a pretty good career, you know, up there. And, you know, and everybody knows Fred Yancey's one of the legends in coaching in Alabama, and he just continues to roll on like Buddy Anderson. And that football game will be a very good matchup. And I believe from what I hear.
I hope so, but Madison Academy.
Well, Madison Academy, they're also going to be. I think they're going to be playing Maplewood out of Nashville too. So they're scheduled to, and they open with Leeds. So they may only, from what I understand, I have not confirmed it, but I was talking to one of their someone close to their football program the other day, and he said they may only have four home games. So we will see.
Any other recent offers that have gone out that have intrigued you, Drew?
Well, you know, I'm more waiting for the summer to come around. I've been more perplexed, I guess, more like with Maurice Smitherman. I understand that Nick Saban likes bigger corners, and that's all well and good. But I've just been kind of perplexed that he hasn't received an offer yet. I thought when he came to the junior day on February the 1st that he would get offered, but it just didn't happen. But I will say this. He's been offered a while back, but one guy that I'm just very, very high on is Richard Pettibon. And I think Alabama's, in the driver's seat for him. He obviously didn't get the chance to make it to the junior day as everybody was hoping, but I do think that I would not be shocked at all if he commits to Alabama by early in the summertime, because I think he really is a heavy lean there. And I'm a big guy on bloodlines, and as everybody knows, he's got spectacular ones with his grandfather and father on.
And it's just
really, I'm excited about him. I love his film. I think he's projected guard, and I think he reminds me of Barry Jones. I mean, it's a tough comparison because Barry was such a great player, but I just think he's somebody that can be special at Alabama, and he's somebody Alabama got in on him early, and I think that was big because I think he's a special talent.
Well, Drew, speaking of bloodlines, how involved is Alabama with John Frumorgan's son?
They're involved, Kerry, but I don't think it's a slam dunk that they're going to take him. As of right now, they met with him. I think they like him as a player, but they like some other OLs a lot too. And I mean, and then the Bello kid out of that they offered recently, who had only been playing football for 6 months. I mean, Deuce Bello, he has a big time upside, but I just don't think as of right now. That you want, that it's a slam dunk that that's going to be someone that they take. I think it's someone that they're definitely going to keep an eye on. But I don't think like a Pettibon or like Marquez Ivey. I don't think he's a slam dunk to be a take. The best way for me to phrase it.
Is Ivey this year's Cam Robinson? Yeah. And how involved is it? I know Alabama's in his top five, but is it a legitimate, like, definite? Alabama's got the inside track or anything on Ivy?
I would not say that. I hear Florida is in big, with him too. But I will say this. Alabama will be involved till the end, and they're going to get a visit. And I think I would say they're probably in the top three with Florida State, Florida, and Alabama. But he likes Alabama a lot. We talked to him on our website, about a month ago. Right after his teammate Chandler Cox got offered, and Chandler Cox has an extremely impressive film as well. Really like him. He reminds me of Jacob Hester. Always had a man crush on Jacob Hester, despite the fact he played for the enemy. He's really somebody that I think everybody knew got the most out of his ability. But I do think Alabama will be involved with Ivy till the end, but he is going to be a tough pull out of Florida. And then, really, hey, watch Drew Richmond. I think he's near the top of the board at right tackle. From Memphis University School, but the problem with that situation, that place is crawling with Ole Miss people. They want him to go to Ole Miss. He likes Alabama, Ohio State, and Ole Miss, and Tennessee. I think Alabama's heavily involved with him, but it's going to be they're going to have to fight off Ole Miss because a lot of the people around that school, much like it's the blind side, are in Ole Miss's corner.
Well, depending on how tire sales are in Batesville this year.
Well, I don't know about that. Well, and then, of course, everybody's going to wonder about Tyler Carr from Southside Gadsden. But I honestly, yes. He's got a top 30 profile, Kerry, but I'm not so sure. I think Cristobal likes him a lot, and Alabama likes him. But, William Barger and myself, we're not as high on him as we are Drew Richmond or Marquez Ivey. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of summer Tyler Carr has and see if he's improved. Because as of, at the end of last season, he was a guy that was just so-so. A guy that we're trying to – that we look forward to profiling very soon on our site, Caleb Kim,
from Hodgson, Georgia. He's a guy I really like his film. I think he's someone that could be a guard or a tackle and could be a very good football player. I actually like his film a little bit better than what I've seen so far of Carr. So, again, a kid can make a big jump and improvement from his junior to his senior season. It's just going to depend on how that goes.
How about one of our newer offers that just went out, I guess, today, cornerback John Reed?
John Reed. Yeah, that's the situation. I haven't seen any film on him yet. But I mean,
yeah, I don't know much on him either.
That's a brand new offer.
I mean, look here.
It's a new offer.
Yeah.
There hadn't been a reason to watch film on him yet. But I just thought you'd heard a little bit about what they saw in him or whatever.
I haven't heard enough yet. I mean, I know that the one that I'm really excited about is Minkah Fitzpatrick from St. Petersburg in New Jersey. I really think he's high on Alabama. And there was two guys I wanted to see this weekend, you know, to evaluate in person as far as their size, Terry, and they weren't with the 7-on-7 team. I put that in my report. I believe you saw the report. But, Cameron Ordway from Giles County, Tennessee, was told he would be with the team out of Louisville. Coach Costner over there. He told me, he's my cousin, but he's decided not to play with us this year. He's going to play with another group, so he wasn't there. And then with the North Carolina Elite Squad, we just offered Mark Fields to send to North Carolina, and he wasn't there either. Those were two kids that I really wanted to see that had been offered recently. From what I understand, Ordway is a kid that has very good size, 6'1", 170 pounds, and I will hopefully get to evaluate him in person. He's right down the road from me at Giles County. But he's a kid right now that I look forward to getting in touch with as well. And I'd like to, just see where he's at with the recruiting process. Because I know he was shocked that Alabama offered him this early. And it's going to be interesting to see how many of these kids are taken. Because I know they really like Kendall Sheffield a lot from Missouri City, Texas. He can really play. They offered him last year when he came to visit the Arkansas game in Ricky Town. And then I do see John Reed from St. Joe's. He's a Philly kid. So, he's going to be somebody that I need to evaluate, need to look at. But it's interesting that they've offered now two kids from the East Coast. But, I mean, I think Fitzpatrick is near the top because he was a priority, and he came for the first junior day, and I think he's going to return for summer camp. And he really likes Florida State and some other schools, but I think Alabama is in good with him so far. And I'm sure they'll use people like Anthony Avery to help recruit him and come that far from home. But he's a great, great talent.
Yep. Did anybody ever figure out if chat was running?
No, it's not.
I hate that.
If it was, there's nobody in there.
Oh, okay.
No questions tonight, huh?
No questions tonight from the chat.
We got plenty of questions. We just like to let them get one in every now and then because they're.
But we do have the live phone in number, don't we, Kerry?
And what is that number?
714-510-3707. That's 714-510-3707. We'll put you on live with Drew DeArmond as well as Kerry Clark from BAMS Radio. Love to hear from you. Give us a call. Lines are open.
And I'll tell you guys. I was just going to tell you. Byron DeVinter is also very close to, Jovan Robinson's one of his former guys on his 7-on-7 team. Jovan finally spoke to someone this week, but I think, he's still going to try to keep it on the down low. It's very much so Alabama's in the lead. That's who he really wants to go. I think Alabama wants him and likes him a lot. But I think Jovan is going to take his time, guys, because he wants to see who – the depth chart is still very crowded. I did a radio show this morning. It's well documented. There's five guys there. Tyron Jones being the fifth. He's very talented. He's a guy that's finally matured a little bit emotionally and a guy that's – got himself together off the field, and they still like him a lot. Then you've got All-T Tenpenny. He wouldn't be fourth in most programs. So I think, Jovan's going to wait and see if T.J. Eldon, leaves early, if a guy like King and Drake can, stay on the football team. If Alabama has some attrition at running back, I definitely think he'll be there. But if not, Jovan is one guy that's a talent. He wants to get on the field. He's only going to have, 3 years to play two left. So he's somebody that's going to want to, he's going to want to play early and push to start. I think Alabama still should be the prohibitive favorite, but it's not a slam dunk only because you have to look at the depth chart at Alabama. And that's not even counting Bo Scarborough, who we had some good intel on this week. There had been some talk that he had a long way to go academically. What we've been told is the plan is set. It's there. He can't make any mistakes. If he has a good last semester and can raise his test score, two things that are very possible –
he can qualify academically, because one of the biggest hurdles is that he's now gone. He does not have to pass the graduation exam. The Alabama State High School exit exam has been basically abolished this year, and the 2014 senior class has been grandfathered in, so no exit exam for Bo Scarborough. He must get his core up, pass his core classes, then he must, you know, get his test score up, and now we've been told that he can take 2 to 3 classes in the summer if necessary, which is likely. So he could be in a situation with Jonathan Cook where he qualifies late, but he has a very good chance to still do so.
Keep hearing a lot about a linebacker that got a Kentucky offer today out of Smith Station named Amonte Caban. Is he even Alabama's radar?
Yeah, that's a good question. He's somebody that I haven't heard a whole lot about, and I tell you what, I was around a lot of Kentucky people this weekend, and I never heard his name come up. I heard, you know, they were telling me about some skill guys and some offensive guys, but I have not heard of him. I'm not really that familiar with him at all. He's somebody, I guess, that's just now come on the scene. It'll be interesting to see if Alabama gets involved with him. But they've offered a lot of linebackers, like you just talked about, DeBerry and the other young man out of Virginia. So they look like they're very, very good football players. But with that young man, that's a new one for me. I have not heard much about him at this time.
You know, talking about guys that are already committed and been committed for a while, but, of course, they can't sign until February. What kind of role do you foresee Mobile Viger running back Desharius Flowers playing in Tuscaloosa?
Well, you know, I've even heard he can make it. As of right now, he's being evaluated as a running back carry, but I've even heard there could be, you know, he could get a look at safety. He's a very physical kid. He's a downhill runner. I can see why Nick Saban likes him, but I've also heard, you know, Damien Craig could be getting involved heavily. And, you know, he may not be a super solid commit to the University of Alabama. But I think he will get his first look at running back, but I think he could also get a look at safety on the other side of the football. He's very, very physical. And, you know, Alabama had good luck out of Viger. I think if they stay on top of the young man and he's a true priority, that he'll end up in the class. But it's going to be interesting to see what kind of senior year he has. He had a pretty good junior year where he rushed about 1,200, 1,300 yards. His film was good. He seems to be a one-cut runner that's very physical just from looking at his tape. But they took him very, very early, as you know, and really before his junior year even started, he committed. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of senior year he has. And I was just looking, you know, when you look at the offer list, another guy that I really like is Leo Lewis. I think he's from Mississippi. We talked about him a little bit. He's a pass rusher, Jack linebacker type. His mentor is a guy, Jimmy Johns, who's familiar to all Alabama fans. He's kind of turned his life around. And Leo Lewis, it's been tough to get kids out of Mississippi, but now, you know, he can even project inside. But now that Bo Davis is back, I think Alabama's going to have a little bit better luck, hopefully in the state. And then I watched a lot of film of your guys, Gary, and I really like McBride. I really like the way he plays his face. I mean,
you know
I think he's a player. Yeah,
I think probably the best linebacker in any classification in the state of Alabama at defending the pass.
Wow.
Yeah, and he looked good. I was going to say, he looked good in space. He looked good. He looked good coming off the edge blitzing, and I think McBride is definitely. From what I understand, he is an Alabama fan. I think some Auburn folks thought that he had the inside track, but I think with Alabama offering him this early and making him a priority, I think they have a really a good day in it with him. And then of course, and then there's a couple of other linebackers from the state of Tennessee. You got Josh Smith from Oakland. Murfreesboro, Tennessee, that really likes Alabama a lot.
I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. If he ended up, I don't know if he's going to commit early, but I think Alabama's in really good shape if they continue to push for him. And Josh McMillan from Whitehaven in Memphis,
he's another guy that really likes Alabama. I think their linebacker board is looking pretty good. He's just going to be the prioritized people. But McBride, that was the first extended film I had watched him. It was about 10, 11, 12 minutes, and I was very, very impressed with what I saw. Obviously, they made it to the Super Six and lost Aniana, but had a very good year. And now have a new head coach, Jamie Dubose from Florence/Prattville, is taking over at Charles.
I know him.
But absolutely. So it's going to be interesting to see what he can do with that program. And obviously, Roquan Smith from Montezuma-Macon County High School in Georgia, he's another guy that Alabama likes a lot. So, and that doesn't even count. I love Christian Bell at Hoover. I mean, as a Jack linebacker, I know you said you were kind of surprised Alabama offered him so quickly, and I like Darrell Williams a lot as well. He had a big-time Super Six state championship game, but it'll be interesting to see where the Hoover guys fall in the pecking order.
I was actually more surprised at how early they offered Darrell Williams.
I've always been pretty high on Bell because I think Bell gets a lot of sacks. Durrell, to me, I don't even know if Durrell is – I don't know. I don't know how committable Durrell's offer is.
Well, and I'll say this. Christian Bell, I believe he likes Alabama, and if they push, there's a very good chance that could happen because from what I understand, I think he dates Bobby Humphrey's daughter as well. So already
oh, really?
Time for the time.
Oh, there you go. Where are you coming up with this stuff, Drew? Oh, my heaven. I mean, you come up with stuff. You know, I read all these different, and not to denigrate any of the other guys around the state because, I mean, I really respect some of the cats that – and pull this information together, but I just had to shake my head. Well, he dates the daughter, and it's like, oh, my gosh.
Bird, who recruited Drew for this show?
Well, you know what? The king of Alabama recruitment, Kerry Clark. How's that for bearing obeisance in your way, your direction?
I don't know what that means, but okay.
Yeah, it sounded good anyway.
And I got to tell you guys, we've got a new member of our audience now every week. Over in the suburbs of Atlanta, Tiffany Hall. She's been listening all night. She's been enjoying it. She was kind of getting wondered if I was ever going to get a chance to come on. But like I was telling her, you guys get on long-winded conversations, and when we start talking, we don't really like to be quiet. So that's just the way it is.
I
think we didn't have to stop
it
then. We wouldn't.
I mean, the nice thing about the show is everybody actually has something to bring to the table, and everybody.
Right.
Full about letting them bring it to the table. But welcome to the show this evening. We're glad you got to.
I wish she'd call in because I've chatted with her a little bit on Facebook a while back. And, you know, she's the second most famous resident of Noonan, Georgia.
Who's the first name?
Oh, noted author Keith Donovan, formerly of Athens, Alabama.
Oh, there you go.
But he now lives in.
Yeah.
Wrote a lot of Alabama books.
Yeah, so.
I can remember.
In fact,
this is how old I am, Drew. Yeah. Drew, this is how old I am. I can remember when Keith Donovan and Barry Allen were freshman student interns in UA Media Relations.
Oh, my.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it makes me pretty damn old.
Kerry, did Donovan write the book about the tailgating?
No, that was the guy from New York.
Okay.
Ah, crap. Donovan wrote the book about the missing ring, 1966.
You're thinking about Warren St. John, Kerry.
Yeah, Warren St. John.
St. John, that's right.
Now, I couldn't put down either one of those books, so.
I could not put
Rammer
down
Jammer
that.
Was Warren
St. John's, yeah. Rammer Jammer was unbelievable.
Did Donovan do the missing ring?
Yeah, he wrote the
yes.
missing ring story
okay.
about the 1966 National Championship
yes.
game.
Yes.
But he also wrote a book very recently about Bart Starr. And Keith wrote several books. You know, we ought to have him on the show sometime. He'd love to come on, I know. Real good guy. But like,
well,
I
got a commitment for y'all. Just got a text message from Tiffany Hall. She will call in after A-Day. So we
after
will have
A-Day.
Her on the air.
So you're going to have to
That's
work.
After she gets to hug me and Drew in person. Okay, I'm down with that.
So, you know what? I've got my
Know where the BAMS tin is.
I've got my hands full with Bring the Pain. He's still licking his wounds over the Iron Bowl. And you, as you heard me say over the air tonight, Kerry, you know, I will have to give him the biggest human hug that has ever been given a human.
You hug Payne, and I'll hug Tiffany and Payne's girlfriend, Jocelyn.
Oh.
And maybe even be
scared. I'm here as simply as the MD for the soul.
And Heather, too.
Well, it's Heather.
Oh, hey, I don't know if Heather's listening or not, but you know how she was on me, how I needed to come down to the right field stands and all that, the baseball game, and I told her I really go to softball?
Yes, sir.
Heather, if you're out there, the only way you get me to a game in right field is if you promise me three hugs. That's you, your sister Ashley, and Payne Top, Georgia Salem's mother. You get all three of those lined up, I'll skip softball that day.
Know what? If I just get to see their pretty smiles, I'm a happy man. I don't even need the hugs.
Okay, pump boy.
Well, Bird,
hey,
here,
you know,
kinda, I do want to comment one more thing. I know we haven't really talked much, but it looks obviously like Anthony Grant will be back. I was as shocked as anybody as I was in Georgia with low expectations for senior day, and they eviscerated Arkansas. But it looks to me like with the aggression that they've had on the recruiting trail that they're going to sign maybe two kids late. I did watch some film of the kid formerly at Gadsden City who's now in Florida in prep school, Jeff Garrett, and I'm Kerry may have as well, but I like him a lot. He's a 6'7 kid with a 6'11 wingspan, and he reminds me a lot of Chris Hines. And,
but he's only 2'10".
I know he's only 2'10". I agree with that. But I think he's a good-looking player. He has a pretty decent offer list. you know, Tennessee's also offered him, you know, the College of Charleston, Alabama. I think Auburn probably had, but now they're probably going to have a coaching change after tonight. But, like I said, I think it's interesting. And UAB, I think it also offered him. I think he's a kid that worth taking a flyer on. Now, the junior college center, I'm not much for 5.5 rebound JUCO. Had enough of that.
Yeah.
I hope Alabama's not as serious about him. But then, of course, Jackson Davis, you know, they had a lot
That's
of
the guy I want right there. That's the guy I want.
Yeah, he's a kid. You know, it's going to take me a long time to get over William Lee, but he would help. And Vanderbilt, Skip Carey has said, is heavily involved with him. But, you know, I think Alabama's being aggressive with him. And a lot of his high school teammates or classmates were in at the 7-on-7, one of the Kentucky teams. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see a lot of kids from Lafayette High School. And they really need to get an official visit out of him because, you know, the playing time's there for the taking. And I do think – I'm very interested to see how they play tomorrow night, Carey, because I still say they play better without Nick Jacobs. And I've been really excited at Shannon Hale and Jimmy Taylor's, you know, raising their level in the past 2 weeks.
Well, we had Stephen M. Smith call in, who's a student journalist at Alabama. He called in this past hour, and his intel is that Nick Jacobs will be back on the team next year. I don't know how accurate that is. I don't know. I mean, he says it's sourced.
He was pretty firm on his source, wasn't he, Carey? I mean,
he was pretty firm on his source, and then where he lost me, Drew, was when he said that he thought the best cornerback on the team was Geno Smith, and Geno's a safety now. So I'm thinking, okay, Stephen.
Oh, good Lord.
But in all seriousness, I don't know what his intel. He says he's got sources on campus, and he's a student, so I'm not going to call him a lie.
No,
that say that Nick Jacobs is coming back next year if he keeps on going to class. Now, we'll see. I that's not our call. That's Anthony Grant's call. But I'm with you, Drew. I'd like to see him take Jeff Garrett and Jackson Davis.
I would like to see him take two guys, Carey. I think the team has played better. I think, you know, Nick Jacobs slowed them down. And my thing is this, there's only been one kid that's ever come back from a lengthy – well, actually none. Michael Green had some suspensions at Alabama in return. But the only other lengthy suspension during the Anthony Grant, you know, situation was Tony Mitchell, and you kind of see where that went. So a lot of times, to me, if a young man misses as many games as Nick Jacobs has missed, he obviously dug a big hole for himself, and I just don't think – I don't see him returning. And, yeah, I wouldn't – that's up to Coach Grant. But to me, you know, Nick's got 1 year left. I've never even – he's never played up to SEC capability enough. I think he's a young man and probably just needs to get as far along academically as he can, transfer, sit out a year, and finish at a mid-major school, and then, you know, and go from there. But I just don't think right now, I think Alabama needs to go in a different direction. I think Anthony Grant, he would have with Carl Engstrom likely going back to Europe. He's got two scholarships. See if you can fill those positions. A guy like Jeff Garrett, if you go after him hard, I mean, he's fixing to visit Alabama. He's an Alabama native. He should be a guy you should be able to sell on coming in and the playing time's available. And then Jackson Davis, same deal. So, I mean, it's no guarantee they're going to sign both those guys. But if you can sign both of them, then to me the writing's on the wall for Carl to go back to Europe and Nick Jacobs to transfer.
If they sign them both, those two guys will both be gone. You're absolutely right.
I mean, you know, and to me – yeah, to me, they're offering so many people and getting involved with several guys. To me, they're recruiting for more than one spot. I may be wrong on that, but it looks like to me that they are.
Yeah, I heard Antoine Petway speak about a month ago, a month and a half ago, and he said they definitely were going to sign one late, but not to rule out two. He said one for sure. He said we're looking at big men from the junior college and high school ranks that'll fight you for a rebound and scrap. And it was what we wanted to hear, but now we need to see some signatures.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You got to close the deal. Totally, I totally agree with that.
Drew and I had a bird, and y'all, you and Legend may have covered this before I came on, but Drew and I had an interesting conversation on Twitter that we both got a lot of smart-ass retorts on about what we thought about the new SEC football announcing team, Brent Musburger and Jesse Palmer. And Drew said he would like to have seen maybe Brad Nessler, but my thing was, and all I was saying was, I don't want the SEC Network to hire ever either Tim Brando or Clay Travis. So some D-bag replies, anybody that would not watch a football game because of the announcers need to stick to eye dancing. And I didn't even give the guy a response. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know. But what do you think, Bird, of the Brent Musburger, Jesse Palmer pairing as the primary team for SEC?
Oh, gosh.
My first reaction, Drew, is I hope Jacob Cooper doesn't have a really beautiful girlfriend that they can find in the stands on camera.
I'll start it with this way. I'm not a Jesse Palmer fan. I think he's a little bit of a twit. I don't think he's
not as much as Danny Cannell.
He's a twit. He doesn't bring as much to the booth as I would have expect the SEC network to have. I think Musburger
That's
is
fair.
An old. Yeah, Musburger is an old pro. Whether you like him or hate him, he calls a good game.
I hope he's on a 1-year contract.
I'll tell you this, Bird. I wish they had been able to get Todd Black, which is the color guy. He's the best in the business now.
Blackledge is terrific.
He's great. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, it was Mike Godfrey. But I mean, I just think right now that he's the best guy, and And obviously he's probably going to do a lot of national games, but Todd Black, which does as good a job as anybody
yep.
as far as
yep.
preparing, and
yep.
you know, and I think he's always succinct, he's always to the point, and I just like Nestler. I think they play off of each other well. Musburger, you know, can kind of get on your nerves just a little bit. I do admit Herb Street's really good too, but of course he'll probably be doing a lot of national stuff as well. But you know, Jesse Palmer,
he won't be
SEC.
This is all SEC. I mean,
right.
Yeah, Herbie's got his gig going big time with ESPN, so there's no way he's jumping out of that unless they just pay him.
I will be honest with you. From what the little bit I've seen with him in a year, I would have taken Pollock over Jesse Palmer. I mean, I like Pollock. I like Pollock's passion. He's a Georgia guy, but you can't really tell it. I mean, a lot of times I think he does a good job of being partial, and I think to me he's already better than Palmer.
Hey, guys, we have less than a minute and a half left on the show, so I wanted to point something out before we close out. One of Drew's predictions from about 15 minutes ago just occurred. The Auburn Opelika News has announced that Tony Barbie has been fired by the University of Auburn. So, Drew, you heard it from me. Let the Rick Stansberry watch begin, and also the Devontae Pollard watch begin.
Well, I just there's no way in heck they're going to get Bruce Pearl. Now, I know that's going to start
No. He's already turned it down. Stansberry's
yeah,
the guy.
Stansberry's the guy. And, yeah, it's not
Pearl.
Pearl
wouldn't take that job.
Pearl, there's no way he's going to – it's like telling Pearl he's got to wear orange and pass out Whataburgers after he completes his coaching gig. Give me a break.
The guy, and he's promised to bring Devontae Pollard with him.
And I will say this, Gary, it bothers me because Alabama chose somebody over him coming out of high school and he went to Virginia and then they didn't really – push to get him as a transfer. Why Alabama didn't get Casey Harrell, I'll never know, and I'll let it drop.
Yep.
All right, I agree with that. Well, we're almost out of time, Bert.
We are out of time. It looks like the show is about to go into its, sweet home stage, so let me go get this off while they're playing. Saying our thank yous and our good nights.
Thank you, Drew.
All right, guys, thank you, and I'll be on next week. Good night. Thank you.